Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday Night Jaw roundtable discussion of the Royal Rumble 2018 and NXT TakeOver Philadelphia Soft Cheese. And it's not its official name. It's not its official sponsor.
Do they even have Philadelphia Soft Cheese in America?
Yes.
Do they?
Correct me if I'm wrong. America. Dear America, at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw, first question of the day. Do you have Philadelphia Soft Cheese? Or is it called... Blackburn soft cheese.
I only know that they do because friend of the podcast Chris Brooker posted a picture of Philadelphia soft cheese in the morning, saying, and he went out, yeah. Right, he was there, and that was his.
He had amazing seats as well because he was messaging me through the show,
yeah,
and like amazing seats on the with his back to hard cam, like three or four rows from the front. He was just messaging me going, I can't believe
how's this happened.
I can't believe how cool this is. And good for him. He deserved a holiday, and I'm very pleased that he went out and had a nice time.
Yeah.
So he seemed to really enjoy himself. Good. And he got to the ECW arena and stuff like that.
Amazing.
We should go there
as tourists.
Yeah, just as a pilgrimage. Maybe one of the days they're doing bingo. Let's just go.
All right.
Yeah. a little explanation. There's meant to be three guests with me today. And I forgot to say, we are on the Distraction Pieces Network. We'll get to that in a second. I'm so tired. Look, let's be honest. This is probably going to be... It's going to be brilliant, because this podcast is, I'm not going to lie, wonderful.
It's fine to not mention that because they've probably had to listen to my really long advert that's at the beginning of all the Distraction Pieces podcasts. That when there was two things on the network, it was this nice, short, punchy sting. Now I list every podcast. Everyone has to listen to it every episode. It's a 45-minute advert
do
for
another,
the network.
Do a new one and just make up a podcast that doesn't exist. One of my favourite things I've ever heard is Noam Dar was talking about Zack Sabre Jr.'s music taste backstage at one of our shows. When we were back at the garage, I think. And Noam is very funny. And Noam's just getting really incredulous talking about the fact that Sabre's music taste is quite obscure. And he's got excellent music taste, but he has obscure music taste, it's fair to say. And also his new theme music for us is absolutely unbelievably good. And very suitable for him.
Yeah.
So he's trying to articulate the fact that he can't comprehend the sort of music that Zack Sabre likes. And he goes, it does an impression of him. He goes, yeah, my name's Zack Sabre Jr. My favourite band is Sausage in a Tin.
I love it. On a recent Hardcore Listing podcast, Stu was saying how when they'd met Andrew Beef Johnson, the golfer who was on there, we were backstage at Pip's podcast in Ireland. And he said, "Yeah, we were backstage just eating and drinking beer like Nikki Six and Axel Slash." And Axel Slash just killed me as the best made up rock and roll now.
I'm sure Axel Slash is a character in Streets of Rage 2.
Definitely.
I'm pretty sure Axel Slash is in CZW, isn't he?
Well, he might have been in the old Ohio Valley wrestling before people get given a decent gimmick.
God, this is going to be a tangent cool podcast. You've not even got the intro out of the way yet.
You've got so many podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network, you should get Hardcore Listing to list them.
Hardcore Listings top 5 podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network.
So anyway, we went to have
Distractionception.
Nice. Was the top always spinning? So I've got two guests today instead of three. I'll introduce you to my two guests. You've figured out who they are by now. If you've listened to this podcast for the nearly 2 years it's been on, then you know who both of them are. One of them has the smooth, relaxing voice of a man reading the shipping forecast, and the other one is Scroobius Pip. So, so anyway, guests. Pip, hello, mate.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm going to make a serious point, because there will be a lot of dicking around today, but yes. you put out a podcast on Friday last week, a bonus Distraction Pieces podcast,
yes.
about the recent sexual misconduct and abuse incidents in British wrestling, yeah. which is then... After, I think after you'd recorded it, it expanded to the whole world of wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was tremendously helpful. I listened to it when I was sat in Hull writing the other day. I thought yeah, it was fantastic. Cheers. I've been recommending it to people. If you've not listened to it yet, obviously subscribe to the Distraction Pieces podcast anyway, because it's Pip's podcast and it's wonderful. But this yeah. podcast is super helpful. Pip was joined by Bozzers, who's been on Tuesday Night Show yep. before, Kirsty Bosley, who's a fantastic journalist, Susie, who's known as Death by Susie on Twitter, who you can see normally in the front row of most Progress shows, yep. Who's a great wrestling fan and a really cool person, and Vicky Haskins, who yeah. is a professional wrestler slash professional wrestling manager, and has been around wrestling since she was a kid. Yeah. So yeah. I thought it was really helpful. Loads of really good advice on there. Rather than, I think your big thing you wanted to do is make it not all about gossip and speculation, which is
or that was it.
Not I helpful.
Think, a lot of these subjects, it's easy to jump in and have an opinion, and all you're adding is your opinion, and yeah. that's not helping much. That's kind of so. I hit up Bozzers and said, look. We don't have to do a podcast at all, but if you feel that we can do something that will help, then let's do it. And Bozzers in particular, she spoke to the police to get advice. She spoke to victim support. She got a statement from Progress, from you guys. And yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And the reaction's been insane. And all the praise stops briefly off at Kirsty and Susie and Vicky, and then continues on to the destination of everyone who's survived these horrible events, however they've dealt with it, whether they've come out and spoken about it or whether they've chosen not to. And that was kind of the key thing for us, that we didn't make the podcast about us
yeah.
as such. It's about the subject and it's about what can be done to move forward.
Yeah, and I think yeah. Certainly something I was speaking to Vicky Haskins about yeah. yesterday, and you know, obviously I want people to go and listen to the podcast, but she seems... she's determined to sort of try and really make a difference going forward
yeah.
in wrestling. I know she'd spoken to John about it as well previously.
Yeah.
And I spoke to her yesterday and said, look, anything we can do to help, which we obviously want to do, because like we pride ourselves on being a professional organisation that wants everybody to be happy, whether it's in the audience or whether it's backstage. And we'd like to think nearly everybody is.
Yeah.
And I chatted to a couple of people yesterday who, you know, I reiterated, look, if you've got an issue with something, I'm really approachable.
Yeah,
just come
yeah.
to me and talk to me. So
it's not hard to find you, is it?
No. And I will listen to everybody. So yeah. So I spoke to a couple of people yesterday, a couple of people in the crowd I had a good chat with, and a couple of people backstage
yeah.
who've had some issues. So I had a positive time talking to people yesterday. But from our point of view as a company, my point of view personally from stuff that's happened in my life, I don't want anything like mm-hmm. that in wrestling. So that podcast being out there and being able to point people at that, which had so many more, rather than it just being little bits and bobs here on Twitter and people speculating,
yeah.
I think
yeah,
exactly. everyone listened to it and got exactly the right impression
Completely.
From it, the right idea.
And particularly what Vicky and Mark are doing with their plans to provide a service for organisations that don't know how to get the right checks done and all that. As soon as I heard that, like Progress came to mind, because you guys have directly experienced the speed of growth.
Yeah.
So you suddenly had to have paramedics at shows. That wasn't something that you had to consider previously. You had to go, oh, we've got big all of a sudden. We need to do certain things that take it up to a next level of professionalism. And some people won't know the things that they're meant to do. And what Vicky and Mark are planning to do with Conquer is provide advice and ways to get CRB checks if you're a training school, to get the appropriate safety at shows and things like that. Because, yeah, it is a thing that literally 2 years ago, a lot of these people, or a year ago, a lot of these people were, it's me and my mates training at the local hall, and now you're a world-renowned wrestling school. You're not going to know how to be, you might not know how to be the professional side of that. So, yeah.
And
there's some great advice all through.
I think as well, like, wrestling in every, not just here, in every country, has always been rooted in the carny sort of culture that it came from. And what's happened in the last, not just in the UK, but in Japan and in America, everywhere, wrestling over the last decade has got to be a much more professional business than it was before. At the top end, and but there's still stuff that isn't. And
Completely. It's time for, I think it's probably time for sort of governing bodies, local authorities, borough, even just like at the very local level, like borough councils, to take an active interest in people who are working on their patches.
Yeah, I agree.
And actually get things regulated and licensed.
Yeah.
So yeah, so listen to Pip's bonus podcast that came out last Friday. It is great. So I would heartily recommend listening to it. It's very helpful. In other news, Pip, you watched a lot of wrestling and did a load of stuff over the weekend. How much sleep have you had in the last 2 days?
Under 8 hours over the last 2 days, because I had my club night on Saturday night, which meant I couldn't watch NXT live. So I got in at 4, then set my alarm for 8 to watch NXT, because I then had to drive to Progress, because I've missed like 2 Progresses in a row. I can't be having this.
Yeah, we wouldn't talk to you if you'd have missed this one.
Exactly. 3 strikes and you're out. I know how it works.
Made this podcast very quiet.
Yeah, it would have been awkward. and then drove home and watched the Rumble. And yeah, it's been a lot of wrestling, but joyous.
Yeah.
And then slept briefly and came to London.
I mean, you did say, my other guest, if you haven't guessed by now, is my business partner and Chief Cyborg of Progress, John Briley. Now, John, Pip did say he's quite tired. If you're going to go into full Velveteen Dream, Aleister Black essay mode, he's just going to use that half hour to catch up on some sleep.
Yeah, I said, can you let me know which match John's written an essay on? Just because I want to hear it, but I can catch up on that. Excellent, noted. I can catch up. But I thought I can catch up on that tomorrow, so I'll just have a nap during that bit.
Oh God.
Rude.
Now, warning, spoilers. I'm going to talk about something that happened at Progress yesterday. So if you're waiting for it to go up, when's it up on demand, John? Let's not do that. He seems in a good mood for this time of day so far. Why do you break mic stands every time you get into the studio?
I don't know.
Come on. What's his issue at the moment?
It's slightly floppy, isn't it?
Well, the equilibrium's a bit off, I think. Like the balancing point of the...
Oh God! Can you use the word fulcrum? I really like that word.
See, I normally think that they're better if they're.
I tend to agree.
Tilt it down, but that's.
I'll just hold it like that. I'm going to do this like Liam Gallagher. Just.
I'm loosening it. I think I'm loosening it.
There was a time when we had a Progress show where the ring crew kept coming to tighten the ropes, So the ring crew kept coming to tighten the ropes at one of the Progress shows. And they tend to tighten.
I've got no idea.
They tend to tighten. Sorry, I'm padding my YouTube dick about. They tend to tighten the ring ropes between every second match. And what was happening is they were going round and tightening them, but one bloke was going round and loosening them because he didn't realise which way to tighten. So one guy was cancelling out. And after every match, you go, why are the ropes still dead loose? And that's why.
So we've had no luck here.
We had no luck. Oh, that's better.
Oh,
that's better. Let me check.
This is live level checking.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Anyway,
right, sorry.
So, spoiler for the Progress show yesterday. The Progress show yesterday. Lots of stuff occurred. Twas a fun show, I think we had my favourite match in Progress history yesterday.
Yep.
Which is high praise. And I love all different types of wrestling, but if you're a regular Tuesday Night Jaw listener, then you will know one of my favourite matches of all time is Ishii Shibata from the G1 in 2012, I think. We had that yesterday, but longer, and in a company that I co-own with my mates, which was Volta against Timothy Thatcher in our main event. And for a match that, if you unpack it, didn't have anything, there was nothing... There was no... I think anyone went to the top rope at any point in the match. No. It was a little bit on the outside. It was just two lads having a scrap. Yeah. And watching... I always watched the crowd reaction stuff. There was no daft crowd chants during it. People chanted for each guy and chanted the ring camp and chanted Das ist Progress because of the German thing. But there was no daft crowd chants or anything like that. It was just people just stopped and watched.
It had my favourite bit of quiet crowd reaction because for people who don't know, they're both from the same faction.
Yes,
and there's not a rivalry. It's just they're going together to pit their skills against each other.
Yes, it's a group based on sporting excellence and competition.
Yes, exactly. So it was
which is very German as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
and there was just one person in the crowd near me who was their first time, and that match was going on. Oh, John's mic's flopped.
Let's just ignore John's mic. Me and you keep talking, Pip. We'll just kick John out.
So, yeah, there was one person who was... It was their first time, and he turned to his mate, because it's a very brutal match.
Yeah.
And obviously, you guys smash it on storylines and all that. Your videos recently, the Flash one, I think, was awesome and all this. But he was like, so what's their rivalry? He said to his mates, so what's their rivalry? And the other went, I think it's... it's because he used his music. and they weren't joking at all. It was a genuine... Because they walk out to the same music, they thought the intensity and fury was because... It's because he used his music.
I'm having that.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Right, mic position 3 here. How's this for levels, Jim?
Yes, that works perfectly.
It's good. It looks... It's completely accidentally ended up in that position.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it was working, mate. I think you might be all right. But yeah, that main event is... I mean, John's going to get people asking him for it for the next few days. But good Lord, was good.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And always, I go away from every show, please, but when you've had a main event like that, it just... people. Yeah. It's legit. If I know that people... Because we've got a lot of people who like us in America and obviously because we're in Australia and stuff now as well. We've got people who like us all around the world. And I think it's the sort of thing that... It's a match that's that good that people will hear about it, seek it out, and then hopefully enjoy everything the company has to offer.
And it blew away friend of the network, Rufus Hound, who's been on the Stop and Search podcast and the Distraction Pieces podcast.
Yes.
So it was great just seeing him afterwards, like, that's the best wrestling I've ever seen in my life. It's like, yeah, you should.
It's
taking you so long, mate?
It's weird because, like, I have Rufus's name tattooed on me, which is an odd story.
Do you?
Yeah, so on my post-it note tattoo on my top of my arm, when I was trying to get Twitter followers, so I said when I got to 5,000 Twitter followers, I'd get some of their names tattooed on me. So I've got three of my followers, and I've also got Al Murray and Rufus Hound, because they were the people who retweeted it the most and helped me get the followers.
Brilliant.
And I've known Rufus, because Rufus used to do stand-up, so I've known Rufus for ages. Last time I gigged with him was at a charity gig in Wolverhampton. It was one of the worst gigs I've ever done.
Really?
And but he was just a super nice dude.
Yeah.
And didn't know he liked wrestling until he tweeted about us the other week. And we invited him to the show, and now he's going to be very much like you.
And there every show.
Can't
get rid of us.
But, you know, it's nice. It was nice that he's got a lot of Twitter followers, and it was nice that last night he was tweeting about us when we got such a big year ahead. Yeah. So... good on him. And forgotten what a lovely fella he was as well, because he wanted to talk to me about wrestling for like half an hour afterwards, which I always enjoy.
Wonderful. I love Rufus.
So anyway, guest so far, Scooby's Pit, John Briley. The third guest today was meant to be Ginny. Now I'm going to break the fourth wall a little bit here and tell you about what's happened here. So Ginny is already injured herself. She has a fractured hand. That's correct, isn't it? Which is why she wasn't on our show yesterday in a wrestling capacity, but was on the show in a performing capacity with a very, very good promo. Now, obviously wanted to get Ginny on because we're talking about the first ever Royal Rumble show that's got a women's Royal Rumble on it. However, half an hour before we were due to get to the studio, so I didn't unfortunately have any time to get a replacement, Ginny had to pull out. Now, the reason Ginny had to pull out, and again, if you don't like having the fourth wall broken, maybe stop listening for a couple of minutes. Ginny's other half is Pastor William Eva. He was injured on our show yesterday in quite a scary bump. Went for a dive over the top rope, which we've seen him hit loads and loads and loads of times. I think he caught his foot. Caught his knee on the way up. And then landed face first on our wooden floor in the electric ballroom with a very horrible thud. And you know it's a bad bump when everyone in the ballroom kind of went, oh no, and stopped chanting or messing around. Everyone was just like... And the guy stood next to me, Nick, who's the guy who sits in the seat near where I stand, just said, he should stop the match, really, shouldn't he? But people just want to kind of...
Yeah.
carry on wrestlers do. So, John, you can fill us in on what's actually happened with Pasta, who, of course, is a friend of Tuesday Night Jaw. And my interview with Pasta, which you can get on the feed, is one of my favourite things I've ever done with this podcast. So,
yeah, it's fantastic.
So, what's happened with him?
So, yeah, as soon as the match finished, mm-hmm. Pasta obviously went backstage with Roy. Pasta and Roy are friends. Mm-hmm. He sat for a little while, and then Roy drove Pasta and Chuck Mambo, who was hanging around backstage.
Yep.
And the three of them went off to the nearest hospital. Pasta got checked out, got scanned. Turns out he's torn his quad.
So now this is a sad story that he tore his quad. But Pasta has a very good sense of humour. So how did you greet when he told you that he tore his quad? What did you send him?
I sent him a gif of Kevin Nash.
Thank you. Because sometimes people think John is a humourless person. Like, he told me he'd done that, I was like, oh good god. But
yes, so he's torn his quad. He's also dislocated his finger, which was pretty obvious if you saw his hand near the time. Incredibly, having broken his fall with his own face, he doesn't have a concussion.
No, which is good.
Which is great, yeah. He must have a skull made of iron. Mm. But he, as I say, he got scanned, got checked out by the specialists last night, got booked in for surgery immediately, and he's having surgery, got booked in immediately, and is having surgery today.
Mm-hmm. Which is why Ginny's not here.
Which is why Ginny's not here.
Yeah. One of my highlights of the internet last night was a tweet from Roy Johnson saying, this is going to be... this has been one of my most memorable rumbles, and it was him, Mambo, and Pastor William Evil are watching it on a phone in the hospital.
I know.
Which again is beautiful. Is that beautiful thing of its contests, its rivalries, its whatever else? But it's the fact that Roy was insistent on helping Pastor get out the carrying him out the back with the guys. All that, it just shows what.
Well, they came up together through what was previously the Projo. They are genuine mates. They travel together along with Mambo and various others. Absolutely, they look after. An earlier tweet from that same evening was that they got pizza delivered to the hospital.
Good lads. Yes. Good lads.
And a later tweet was Chuck saying, thanks for not tagging me in the photo, Roy. trying to help everyone out and lift everyone up.
I mean, there is a slight... a lot of people are getting injured at the minute, which is I think, is a knock-on effect of the fact there's more wrestling than ever before in the United Kingdom, which means people are working more, and everybody works... Because everyone's a professional. Everyone wants to get noticed. Everyone works at 100% all the time. There's no off days. There's no... there's no phoning it in. Which is an admirable thing, but it does also mean that everyone's getting hurt.
I think sort of an addendum to that is also that because there are more and more shows running, there are more and more full-time wrestlers, which means that the people who were only previously working once or twice a weekend, they don't have those 5 days to recover during the week because they're working 5 shows a week.
Of course, And I am ironically wearing my Kid Lykos T-shirt today, which is the Lykos's version of Operation, where you can see all the injuries that he's got.
Brilliant.
But if you think, just off our roster, how many people are carrying injuries at the minute? Obviously Ginny, now Pasta, Kid Lykos, Eddie Dennis has got a torn pectoral muscle,
Millie McKenzie missed out on our show. She has a problem with her heel or her ankle,
a burst capsule,
synomium capsule.
I mean, don't try and guess if you don't know, mate. You're not,
it's something like that. It's been a long time since I did a GCSE doctor.
Yeah. Wow, you did that in your school.
Yeah.
We did GCSE car crime.
So that I could treat you.
Yeah, we're very different people. There's a lot of people carrying knocks and stuff at the minute, which is... And the thing that I think I want to get across as a promoter is don't work hurt. Like, if someone turns up to our show and they don't look right, I'd tell them not to work.
Well, that's the problem as well. I think there's, because of the way the scene's blown up and the added exposure, is there's not really any small gigs anymore.
No.
So it is that kind of thing. Where in the old days of WWE, they'd go easy on the house shows and they'd save the big bumps for Mania or whatever else. And it's like every show's a big... Everyone's going all out 100% every show. And
there is no house shows, is there?
Yeah. Exactly.
And which we like to adopt as our catchphrase. When we do shows overseas, we like to say no house shows. But at the flip side of that, it's like, it's hard if you're someone like and again, he's not someone who's carrying an injury, and someone who's miraculously fully fit all the time, someone like Travis Banks,
yeah,
who works more than most wrestlers and at an intensity, because he's the most intense human being in the world.
Yep.
You know, it's, if you work at his level of intensity all the time, it's, you've got to really look after yourself to not get hurt.
Yeah.
Someone like him or El Ligueros or someone else who's always working as well. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that thing of, if you're working constantly, how do you stay healthy? Especially if the travel as well sucks.
Yeah.
Like if you're sat in a car for 4 hours and then you have to go.
Like, I guess, like, I'm no physio or anything like that, but
I knew that from what you said about the ankle before.
Fair, entirely fair point. But yeah, if you're doing 5 shows a week and you're spending another even 6 hours a day on average in the car, when do you go to the gym? To strengthen and make sure you don't get injured?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a vicious circle.
Yeah.
From a lot of the wrestlers I follow, they go to 24-hour gyms at, like, 2 in the morning. Yeah.
But that can't be healthy.
Well, no. I mean, like, I think I have most of my conversations with Travis Banks, because I don't really sleep, at, like, 2 in the morning, where I'll be sat up writing it, and he'll just send me a message on Facebook going, "You up, bro?" Yeah, clearly. Just because he just doesn't sleep. That and the fact that he has pre-workout instead of blood. Right, let's talk takeover in the room, and we pass on our best wishes to, obviously, to Ginny, who's carrying an injury herself, who will try and get on a future podcast, and to Pastor William Eva with his surgery today. So if you want to send them good wishes, then do via social media. So takeover first, then the Royal Rumble. I have just managed to watch Takeover today, because I've had a fairly busy weekend. I always enjoy Takeover. I feel I'm predisposed to enjoy Takeover anyway, because I don't recall there ever being a bad one.
Yeah, 100%.
And then the Royal Rumble is my favourite pay-per-view.
Yep.
Because it's the Royal Rumble, and I'm quite tempted to go to it next year, but I don't know if we've already arranged dates for next year or whether or not we'll clash.
We have. Yeah.
Do we clash?
Yeah.
I really wanted to go to Phoenix.
I mean, we could change it.
Okay. Don't put it in your diary yet, guys. We'll start with Takeover. I enjoyed Takeover a lot. I think there's one absolutely amazing standout match on there, which is, I mean, my review of that is going to consist of me saying "I told you so" for 5 minutes, and then there were, everything else on it was good, you know. And there's very little criticism I've seen of it online, short of, you know, a couple of clunky moments in one match. Like, everything seemed to be pretty positive. We'll do it match by match as usual. NXT tag team titles, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. I nearly called them Kyle Fish and Bobby O'Reilly, which is which is their knockoff tag team, that's operating all across the US independent scene at the minute, against a now babyface, Authors of Pain. I've never seen any of their written work. Just bothers me. Like,
it's mainly self-published on like ebooks.
And oh, I was going to say it's all audiobooks.
It's just Akam and Razor going. I like Authors of Pain a lot, but I also really like Fish and O'Reilly because of their work in New Japan, where I absolutely adored them. It seemed. Going into this, I was like, I don't know how they're going to work on a big stage as babyfaces or Spain, because they've, once you're a babyface, you have to sell.
Yeah.
The only time I can think of a huge heel team or huge monster team that managed to get away with being babyfaces without ever really selling very much was the Road Warriors / Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Who notoriously, you couldn't, if you pile drive Hawk, he'd just pop straight back up.
Yeah.
When that was a move that killed people,
he
just popped straight back up and didn't care.
Whatever.
Also, they invented Zubas, which I think we've covered before. Yeah. what a legacy. Yeah, one of the greatest tag teams of all time invented Zubas. So it's weird seeing Authors of Pain selling, but I think in some ways, because of they're both legitimate fighters and legitimately nails, so I think for them to come in and in their first run not have to sell, because selling's the hardest part of wrestling. Selling well is the hardest part of wrestling. Being able to do moves and throw people about,
Completely.
You can and do that.
It's what too many people don't realise, that it's what makes the best wrestlers. It's why Flair and Shawn Michaels are talked about as their all-time best. Why? They can sell like no one else.
Well, someone like Ricky Steamboat built a career off the fact that he used to watch boxers, how boxers would get knocked out, and he used to echo that. So he'd sell differently to everybody else. Yeah. He was selling... people copied him in the end, but when he first broke in, he was selling very differently to what all the people sold. And I think because they've now got the experience and had a good run as heels, they've actually learnt to sell, and their selling's decent. I think the way the match finished with it being a roll up is the most believable way for two guys who were smaller than them to beat them cunning.
I was really impressed with the finish because I believed it was a mistake. I believed a botch as he stumbled back, and then they got the roll up off the back of that, so that was clearly actually the planned kind of end. I was like, that was great, because I was like, oh, they've messed that up. Oh no.
Yeah.
They want me to think they messed. That's part of the story. I was like, what? Well, wonderful.
There was a moment in Volta and Thatcher yesterday where Volta reverses a very sort of amateur wrestling suplex in midair and lands on Thatcher.
Yeah.
And a guy next to me went, oh, did that go wrong? I went, I don't think so. Nope. I think they legit meant to do it, because everything in it looked like a fight. Even the reversals made it look like a fight, which is...
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to stop banging on about that match, which is so good.
It will be On Demand Progress in a few days.
Thanks, mate. I'll watch it again repeatedly. I think I can see Authors of Pain ending up on the main roster probably sooner rather than later, because I think they've very much, like the Revival had done.
They've done everything.
They've done everything needed to do in NXT. Let's move them up. And... you know, and I can see. I think what would be interesting when they're moved up is the size of the roster in NXT in terms of height is noticeable when people move up.
Yeah.
So, you know, skipping a little bit ahead to the Rumble, when Adam Cole entered the Rumble, I remember thinking he's not that short.
Yeah.
Right. And it's the same with the Revival. You look at the Revival and go,
they look tiny, don't they?
They look tiny. And really and tough. it's just because there's a lot of people who are on the main roster who are just dead tall.
Yeah.
That will change over the course of the next decade as the NXT influence counts more and more.
Yep.
But I don't think Akam and Razor are massively tall.
No, they're big.
They're big lads.
Well, Razor's the taller one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Razor's about I don't know, a couple of inches taller than me, and I'm 6'1".
Yeah, they're not, but they look like giants in NXT, but they're not. And constantly wear football shirts.
Both of them, or just one of them?
Both of them constantly wear different teams' football shirts all the time when not wrestling. One of them's a massive Ajax fan, which is pretty cool. What was interesting at the back end of this match is they showed War Machine, friends of progress, and genuinely just friends of ours, because they're two of the nicest human beings in the world. Yeah. One of my favourite car journeys I had last year was with Hanson and Roe in my car, and them getting really excited about an M&S in a services.
Yeah,
like looked so excited. Lovely, lovely, lovely chaps. And again. They're massive in indie wrestling terms. When you stand next to them, you're like, God, they're huge, but they're not. They're not super, super. They're similar sort of size to Authors of Pain.
Yeah,
I think. I'd love to see War Machine Authors of Pain, because I think it would be big lads murdering each other.
Yeah,
you could see that perhaps being the takeover at WrestleMania weekend, being maybe a sort of showcase type match. Introduce one tag team, move another one up.
Maybe, but I think War Machine will do. And they mentioned all their signings a lot during the show, and I like the fact that they've signed people and gone, look, this is a really big deal. It's hard for us as wrestling promoters, because nearly everyone off the indies is getting signed now, so it's making it harder and harder to do things like Super Strong Style, but you know, there's still great people out there. But War Machine being signed, that's a big marquee signing for the tag division. Ricochet being signed is huge. EC3 being signed is huge.
I really liked how huge the reaction to that was, because I really rate EC3, and where I've since seen him in his TNA run become completely enamoured with the indie scene, I'd not really thought about him. It felt that all the hype I was seeing was about Ricochet and War Machine being signed. Yeah. I was glad that the reaction, because he's completely different.
I don't think they'd announced EC3, had they?
No, that's it.
I also don't think So with Ricochet, War Machine, and Candice,
yeah,
they're all going to the Performance Center.
Yeah,
I don't think EC3 will,
right?
Because he's been there for ages already.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think he needs to. So I think his signing's like a Bobby Roode signing,
or a McIntyre,
or a McIntyre.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, but it's just not, I think it's nice that they bring the WWE. Know that there's fans like ourselves who want to know when people have been signed, so they do reveal it. Sometimes it's nice to have a surprise, like when AJ Styles came out, that was great.
Or when Adam Cole turned up in Brooklyn, yeah,
and it's nice to have a surprise from time to time, but knowing that it's probably going to be 3 or 4 months before you necessarily see them on TV, depending on how they hit the ground running, I think it's cool that we're sort of kept in the loop like that.
Yeah.
And it's nice they made a big deal out of it during the show. Little mention we should do at the minute is for the NXT Awards, which are now known as the Aleister Black, Asuka, and Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate Awards. Yeah. Based on
I genuinely don't know who's won what.
So match of the year was Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate at NXT TakeOver Chicago.
Excellent.
So you won't have seen Pete's interview he did on the NXT TakeOver pre-show.
I think it's worth pointing out again that we had a show yesterday.
Of course, yeah.
And there's a lot. It's not just a case of turning up at 11 o'clock on a Sunday and just running a show.
Oh, good. Especially not for you, with the stuff you do, mate. So, and I was in Plymouth as well the night before.
Yeah, I finished watching TakeOver 40 minutes before we started recording.
Yeah. So, yeah, Pete sits down in his smart suit with his scarf on and his title belt, doing one of the sort of pre-show panel interviews, and he just says, "Yeah, I'll wrestle anyone. Just bring Brock Lesnar. I don't care."
Right.
So
loved it.
All the best. So
Wembley.
it was quite nice. It was quite nice balance that people were giving, because all the pictures of Tyler with the award is him smiling and being nice Tyler, and then all the pictures of Pete is just Pete being miserable.
Pete looking miserable. It's great.
With his hair down. He's got lovely hair when he takes it down. Not quite James Drake level lovely.
Of kind of whoosh.
Yeah. I
don't know what the right word is.
No, I
don't have hair.
Mark Haskins put a picture up this week of him where he looked like a lion.
I mean, he always looks like a lion.
And then I was talking to him and Jimmy Havoc and Vicky Haskins backstage yesterday, and I went, "Oh, look, it's the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe." Which meant Jimmy had to be the wardrobe.
That is incredible.
Yeah, I know.
I love it.
So that's their stable name. Next match.
No, it is now.
Can I just quickly say, I love the writing or the storytelling of this match, and the fact that Fish and O'Reilly used a submission heavy attack, because BJJ traditionally was the size eliminator. It meant it didn't matter who's big and who's small, because you've got submissions, so it brings everyone to the same level. Because I was the same, I was like, I love Fish and O'Reilly, but I don't know how they're going to tell this story against these absolute monsters.
I think that the
as the heels against these monsters, it's like it doesn't work. But
the unwritten story there, of course, is that both of Authors of Pain are BJJ experts as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
I imagine it was probably quite good fun to work that match out.
I'm also still stunned at Ranello's reserve and holding back on the fact, because a thing I love about O'Reilly is he uses palm strikes.
Yeah.
And that was essentially invented by Ranello's podcast partner, Baz Rutan, because in Pancras, you weren't allowed a closed fist. So he invented palm strikes that he knocked people out with.
Yeah.
And again, it's something that I hope gets across more to the wrestling community, because sometimes they look a bit like he's just slapping him, but he realised that a closed fist, you've got the bending of your wrist to take a lot of impact out. If it's a palm, you're just ramming a bone into their face, so it's a more brutal strike. And amazed that Ranello hasn't gone on and on about Baz Rutan, the inventor of the palm strike, and all this.
Well, Liger's used it for years, hasn't he? The palm strike as a finish. So,
it's great.
Yeah.
It's a great strike.
Don't tell Walter.
Anyway.
For God's sake, people will die. Second match was Velveteen Dream defeating Cassius Ohno. This was... the only criticism I saw of the show was people saying that the finish of this was a little bit clunky, just because Velveteen trying to get Ohno up for... Yeah. Well, first of all, Ono's a big lad. Second of all, I wouldn't want to be in the situation where you've got 10,000 people watching you wrestle, and sometimes stuff doesn't quite go to plan. The way to deal with it is to get on with it And still go to the correct finish, which it looked like they did. It just took him a couple of attempts to get someone up for a move. Now, to me, people complaining about that, like, quite, oh, he couldn't get him up for a move, it's really like, and then blaming one side or the other for it. Well, that's silly. That stuff happens. Yep. It's fine. And also it's meant to be a struggle. If everyone just perfectly goes up for stuff all the time, then where's the believability in wrestling?
Yeah,
so I get that sometimes people like to revel in botches in inverted commas and stuff like that, but I don't think it's really a botch. It's just, you know, one dude's heavy.
If that's the worst thing on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just one thing. It's a shame when anything like that is something that's going into the finish, because then people do tend to remember it more.
Right? Yeah. I felt like Velveteen's, he's obviously a lot less experienced than Cassius. Yeah. It showed a little bit, I thought, in the match here and there. He's the best.
Yeah, I mean, we're slightly biased because, I mean, Cassius has a very big history in Progress, and also he's a friend. I love him. Like, he's one of my favourite wrestlers of the last sort of 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And if I could change one thing about NXT, it would be that he would be at the very top of things, because I think he's absolutely amazing. But he is still appears two takeovers in a row he's been on.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know he's been beaten, but he's still on. There's only five matches on these takeovers.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people in NXT. You only have to go to NXT TV taping to realise how big their roster is. It's massive.
I was really pleased when the Gargano and Ono match happened, because I'd felt having seen Ono in Progress and things like that, I was like, I know how amazing he is, and I felt you hadn't really got to see that to its full effect on NXT.
Did in that match.
And in that match you really did. And that was kind of a, see,
that's it.
That's the guy.
That's why we love him. Yeah. Mm.
He's great. And he's an experienced dude. I think he's only a couple of years younger than me.
And he's 20 years in the business.
Yeah. And he's, you know, guys like him are brilliant to have around, certainly at places like the Performance Centre, where they're only going to pass stuff on.
Completely.
You know, I know that when we went to a lot of the NXT house shows last year, and they'd put him with someone like Cesar Bononi, who's the Brazilian wrestler who were in the NXT Awards. One of the ones they didn't televise was the sort of next sort of future rising star. And I can tell you, having spent time with that guy, not only does he look an absolute $1 million, he's about 6'6", ripped to bits. It has a BJJ background as well, but is nice and wants to listen and wants to learn. And I remember being at one of the NXT house shows and him just wanting, he wasn't even wrestling, just wanting to sit and listen and talk to people. And he's a good dude. But people like Cassius are passing on their knowledge to him, and people like Roderick Strong will be passing on their knowledge to him, because, you know, whilst people always want to hear about the horror stories in wrestling of people protecting their spots and politics and stuff like that, someone like Cassius Ono is the sort of person who just sits you down and goes, okay, here you go, I'm gonna tell you how to get better. I do think we need to address this, and we know, because of many conspiracy theories, that WWE do listen to this podcast, and often in particular your ideas, Pip, they steal. Now,
100%. Allegedly.
They've not listened to us about calling his finisher the Purple Rainmaker.
Yeah, I don't like it. I still can't get a hold of it.
It's a brilliant pun. Let's be completely comfortable with that. But the Rainmaker is...
Do any move that's got a ripcord and make it the Purple Rainmaker, go ahead. But it's going off the top rope, so there's tons of stuff you can use that Rain is associated with.
Yeah.
Drops, you know, all sorts of stuff. Falls, shower.
The Purple Raindrop.
Yeah, the purple raindrop.
There you go.
Yeah.
The purple rainfall, anything. The purple rain stall, any of these.
Who's got the best elbow drop in NXT? Is it Velveteen or is it Kairi Sane?
I mean,
I know what my vote is. Well, let you lads go first.
Velveteen.
I'm going Kairi. So you've got the deciding vote, Pip.
Right. Now, I need some specifications.
He's rolling his shoulders and cracking his joints here.
At normal speed or in slow motion? Because Velveteen flying through the air in slow motion is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. That is the peak of human excellence. But I do love the Kairi. I'm going to go with Velveteen, because the Kairi one, she tends to have to have them inexplicably sit up for it, and then she re-flattens them on a lot of it. So it's like I've always had slight frustrations with moves where the opponent has to get into the position for them.
inexplicably.
any form of rope hung move, yeah, I always get
exactly. I'm always like, come on, man, just don't do that.
Now Velveteen is still meant to be a heel, right?
Yeah,
he's really over. I know it's Philly, so without wishing to use the WWE excuse of this crowd's insane and not like normal, Philly is a nuts place. I mean, Philly's one of the best cities for wrestling in the city. I'm desperate to watch wrestling in. Absolutely desperate to go and watch wrestling. I'm very jealous of anyone who was at the Rumble or TakeOver or any of the other events, because I know various other companies did shows, indie shows, didn't they? I think Beyond did one.
House of Hardcore did one, yeah. I think, in the ECW arena.
Yeah, and you know, I'd love to see all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I know it's a slightly different crowd in that they really don't like baby faces.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, everyone else was kind of getting the right reaction to what they should be getting. I think Velveteen was certainly the first part of the show was more over than anybody else.
Yeah.
And he's a heel. And I think that's part of his just natural charisma. He's one of the most charismatic. If he looks after himself and doesn't go off the rails in any way or anything like that, he will absolutely
be a megastar.
He'll be a megastar.
He's like, very young.
Yeah. He's 22.
Yeah.
So he will be the Rock levels of famous. Like, he's that good.
I really hope at this stage they continue the kind of stalkerish theme of him. The fact that Ono's the knockout artist, so he came out as a boxer and he was obsessed with getting a knockout, and obviously the whole story with Black was amazing, so I like that. If he's going to be kind of taking something from each person, each opponent, becoming them in some way, and I think that's a really good storyline, because it allows him to have some variations in his flamboyance rather than I think one of the things that that someone will talk about later, Shinsuke struggled with at a point when he didn't go straight to the top of the main roster, was a lot of his eccentricities were there every week. They're the same, they're wonderful, but you're seeing it over and over again. So the idea of someone like Velveteen having these eccentricities but can adapt them and change them depending on who he's against makes it really interesting.
So the thought has just occurred to me that it would be really nice if, rather than adapting his eccentricities, if he took a little something from everyone that he faces.
Yeah, learn from them, so he's getting, he's absorbing
like
something.
Like the main villain from Heroes.
Yeah, yeah. Completely.
And I cannot remember his name. But he took other people's gifts.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get to a point where Velveteen can pull out a spin kick, for example.
Yeah.
Because he wrestled Aleister Black a year earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's learning, he becomes like a composite wrestler.
Yeah, I love that.
Still with all his own charisma and stuff.
Yeah.
I like
it. I think
it.
That'd be cheers. Cracking.
It's good. When we're doing that in progress with someone now?
Wait and see.
I genuinely did think, I don't think we've got any what we could do that with. I think everyone's got their own clearly defined identity at the minute. Next match was the NXT Women's title match, where Ember Moon retained against Shayna Baszler. I've been pronouncing Baszler wrong for weeks, I apologise.
Shall we all pronounce it differently?
Yeah.
Baszler.
That's nice.
I'm just not going to say it.
I enjoyed this. I think this is something that we were talking about backstage yesterday at our show. Now, the Walter Timothy Thatcher match in front of 700 people when they're that close to the ring is amazing.
Mm.
If you did that same match in a massive arena, would it have the same effect? Because people are further away from the action and you can't see quite how visceral it is and how intense it is, because it's, you can see it on TV, but it's not the same as, it's not the same as being that close to it. Everyone at our show yesterday could see every time someone hit someone the sweat coming off of them. You kind of need that. And with this, because obviously Baszler's got the MMA background, they were playing into a lot of this, a lot of arm work. I think an armbar was held on for about 4 minutes at one point,
which
is really good storytelling and the sort of thing I look at and go, I really enjoy that. And I'll tell you what it felt like a bit. It felt a little bit like an Evolve match, because a lot of Evolve matches felt like that because of the legitimacy.
Yep.
Obviously, where Matt Riddle started and Timothy Thatcher was wrestling for a long time and they had Catch Point and people like that. So it felt, from that point of view, it felt really different and felt incredibly different to what most women's matches have felt like, even with people like Asuka, who can probably do all that stuff as well. But it was good, but felt different. And I don't know if, like, I think watching it filmed, great. If I'd have been 30 rows back in the arena, I might have found it a little bit different.
You might have found yourself watching it on the screen.
Yeah.
To work out what was going on.
But even then, like, if you're... lots of wrestling fans are different. I love stuff like that. That's why we did the Shoot Star special last week. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love stuff like that. It's not necessarily for everybody, but I applaud them for trying to do something different. And also trying to really get Baszler over, who is relatively inexperienced as a professional wrestler, despite being incredibly experienced as a fighter.
Yeah, I love this match. Like, this is the one that made me go, yep, we're in TakeOver now, because I thought the slickness of it all, particularly, again, a luck of circumstance here, particularly after some of the clunkiness in the last match where there was a few bits that wasn't that tight, the women came out and just... straight away Ember Moon sweeps and stuff like that, just it all looked so real and was just so tightly executed, quickly done, smooth, slick. Absolutely adored it.
I've mentioned Ember a fair few times on the podcast and how much of a fan I am of her. The fact that she, the arm work they were doing and her proper old school psychology of selling the arm and then hitting the Eclipse with one arm,
which
means it's nowhere near as powerful as well, is just really cool. And then the only way for her to win was to really fold her up and reverse a pinfall.
Yeah.
And if I'm a big fan of, like, if you beat someone by roll up, right? I hate loose looking roll ups, you know, where it's just, oh, I've rolled you up and that's the finish, so that's how we're going to make it look. There's examples of roll ups that look great. That's a great example of her reversing something properly. She folded
holding her down.
But there's 5 or 10 seconds earlier, there's a similar moment where Baszler is rocked backwards and her shoulders are down only for like half a second. And I would hope that Ember Moon at that point would realise, oh, hang on, I might have an opening here if I can get that position again.
And it's but the only other way I think roll ups work is if a roll up is your gimmick, like Chris Brooks. Because he wins match after match after his t-shirt with Death by Roll Up on. And then it works. But the amount of loose looking roll ups, especially in indie wrestling, that you see are like, I don't like them. I like a roll up to look like it's,
they can't get out of it.
It's properly like, if you want to learn how to pin someone without hitting them with a massive impact move, watch every Zack Sabre Jr. match ever. Because he's the king of it. And Tyler Bates really good at them as well. He's got loads of them. So, you know, that's just, it's just a general thing about wrestling. If you're going to roll someone up, do it like that, because it looked great.
But that's it as well. I think there should be more giving credit when a move you've seen all the time is done really well. Because that's it. That's completely true. That was a perfect roll-up because she got all of her weight on her. She was already tangled up because of the armbar. So it was a really good convincing. That would be really hard to kick out of.
Yeah.
Like, we generally, to get someone off of you when you're on your, essentially upside down, because she rolled her up that much. It's like,
it's great. One of my favourite spots of all time involves a form of roll-up, which is the sleeper into the roll-up that happened between Bret Hart and Roddy Piper,
right,
Bret Hart won the Intercontinental title back from him at WrestleMania, I want to say 8, but I might have got that wrong.
And it was the double pin, right?
Hart got the win the Intercontinental title off of Piper, and then they echoed it again at Survivor Series 1996 in Madison Square Garden, where Hart beat a getting very popular Stone Cold Steve Austin off the same thing. So basically, sleeper into the corner, counters up, rolls out, flips back over them and rolls them up.
And then he's on top.
And I think that little things like that, just the desperation to get out of something, is where roll ups should come from more, rather than just, you know, it's going to roll you up. You know, just a point.
I enjoyed the Baszler being presented as a heel going into this, but as a vicious but legitimate fighter during the match, selling the fact that she lost and she hadn't been. Obviously, she lost the match, but she hadn't been beaten decisively. And she's kind of looking a bit rueful and kind of, oh, maybe you got the better of me. And then we go back into pro wrestling at the end of it with the angle.
Where she just chokes up the fuck out. Which presumably means it's not the end of the angle. I also like the fact that WWE and now, because people have this theory that WWE and UFC don't like each other, but there's clearly interaction between the two of them for this, and especially when we get to the Rumble, for the marketability of both companies to work. You know, a lot of... The reason that Conor McGregor is arguably the most famous MMA fighter in the world is because he's essentially a pro wrestler who does MMA.
Yeah, completely.
Because he does promos.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali was the most famous boxer of all time because he copied Gorgeous George and did promos on his opponents.
Yeah.
And but then seeing wrestling take things from UFC, because UFC is so huge, and so even things like Baszler's entrance,
yeah,
like properly showing her coming from the locker
yeah.
room.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah, completely. And I think when they did Joe and Brock, and it was a really short build but a perfect build,
yeah.
I've loved that with Baszler, because again, it doesn't have to be this long. A few people are like, oh, are they rushing her into it? It's like, when you've got something like, oh, she's a really experienced MMA fighter, that's all you need to tell people. That yep. makes it legitimate. It's the same with Brock. It's like, you believe it. You don't need to have this big story and this big build. Yeah, it's yeah. like, no, he could kill you.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, put you in there.
Show it once, get into the big match. Yeah, you don't yeah. need to do it five times.
And that was it. I like if you do a big storyline, a good build, but it doesn't, again, it's a, this one has been an illustration of how it doesn't always have to be the way. I remember when the Samoa Joe and Brock one happened, I was like, it's a shame that they're rushing it because someone's got injured or this or that. And then it was like, no, actually, that was perfect. That was they did that exactly right. I believed it. And the same with Shayna Baszler.
Next up, our penultimate match on TakeOver was an Extreme Rules match between a friend of Tuesday Night Jaw, Aleister Black, and Adam Cole, both of whom have appeared in Progress and both of whom are good lads. The trouble with this match is someone had to lose, and if you look at it from a going forward perspective, Aleister Black is super, 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 super hot. So would you have him lose? Probably not. And then you've got Adam Cole, who is as close to an indie megastar as I think you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But has you're like, well, should he lose? Mm-hmm. Someone had to lose, which is unfortunate because I like them both. And it was Aleister Black who got the win. Tons of interference in the match. Tons of fairly, I'd say crazy spots, but they were crazy spots done safely.
Yeah,
not even that crazy, to be honest. I watched it this morning. I thought part of the beauty of the match was that it wasn't that crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more compared to, because there's very little no DQ stuff in NXT, isn't there? I mean,
correct. Yeah,
yeah. There's the Nikki Storm
Asuka match,
yeah. A TV taping, which was really good. But everything is, it feels everything's more pure wrestling on TakeOver or NXT shows in general than mm-hmm. necessarily the big WWE shows are. So I think those spots stand out more.
Yep.
Compared to the War Games match stood out massively because yep. you were just like, the fuck is this? This is not what we used to in NXT. It's great.
But also, not even that. When we did the end of year drunk cast with Mr. Havoc and the rest of the network people, I spoke about how Havoc, I think, deserves even more credit than he already has as a legend in the scene, for he's known for these hardcore matches, but his psychology is amazing in them, his storytelling is amazing, and that was the thing with this match for me. The biggest oh my god moment was Adam Cole turning round two chairs
mm-hmm.
and the crowd popped and went mental, and it was a simple, he delivered it perfectly, he turned round two chairs, it got more of a reaction than when he went in on top of the chairs. It's just the beauty of it.
The first time a wrestler's amazing. Got a pop for feng shui.
Yeah exactly but it was amazing. Again, it showed it doesn't have to be, and early on you'd kind of had Black kind of choose not to use chairs and stuff like that, so it showed that you can have this amazing extreme match and not just go, oh, what crazy what stupid thing can we do? Yeah, just using that psychology was beautiful.
The psychology and the storytelling is what this match is about. And
phenomenal.
And
they're wonderful. Two guys who were, let's be honest, great, and have wrestled each other for us, I've just realised, in a tag team match, admittedly. But
it's really interesting because I've loved seeing Adam Cole in NXT, because I'd seen him, I saw him once at Progress, and Adam Cole isn't someone that necessarily, I've learnt now, is going to blow you away in a single match.
Mm.
See, again, or compared to like an Ospreay or one of these that are going to be bang, 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 bang. But seeing him week by week telling stories, building the character, you're like, I've instantly like, yeah, this is because when he was the big signing and the big name, I was like, seemed good, but I've seen better people at Progress, kind of thing, not in a rude way at all. But then seeing him, it's like, right, that's why he's built, he's just, yeah.
Amazing.
I have to say I hadn't seen any of the build to this. I'm usually about a month behind with NXT.
Yeah.
So by the time I get to a takeover, I usually haven't seen the couple of weeks leading into it. So I hadn't seen any of the build to this. So for me, the storytelling was purely in the match. That's all I'm judging it on. So I don't really know what the beef is going into it. This was my favourite match on the show.
Yeah.
It's not mine, but
it was my favourite, but it was close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was... I just thought the storytelling, the psychology, it was so good.
And that can be so shunned in a gimmick match as such. Yeah. It's so easy to forget that. They're like, no. Yeah. This is what we do best.
I think I was pleased to see people not complaining on the internet about the fact they had to hold the match up for a couple of minutes because of a bit of blood.
Mm-hmm.
Cole cut his hand. And they spent some time just with the medic, just making sure his hand was sorted. So, but normally, you know, when you get people going, oh, but we want to see blood. Okay, I'm sure you do, but times have changed. It's not Mid-South in 1978, you know. So,
Can I talk a little bit about the framing of Aleister Black?
Oh, hang on, is this the essay?
No, it's only like two sentences.
Come on. Yeah, go for it, mate. Go for it.
So there are two things that I really noticed as someone who edits wrestling. I notice framing of things and the way that matches are edited and things like that. Mm-hmm. During his entrance, there is a shot where he comes up like rising from hell, and then he walks all along the. You see that from his shoulders and his head only, and they're walking along the bottom of the frame, and you can see his tron above him.
Yeah,
I really, really enjoyed that because to me that suggests. You know, sometimes you're aware of something in your peripheral vision, mm-hmm. but as soon as you try and see it, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I kind of got that from it. Like they're presenting him as a presence almost, a feeling.
Yeah,
completely. rather than
just he's this tough guy.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And then right at the end of the match, after Black has won, Black spends so much time sitting down, cross-legged. And that's become like his signature pose, but he doesn't end the match like that this time. The go home shot, if you like, is him standing up, still standing, having survived this war with Adam Cole. Adam Cole is on his haunches on the stage, being supported by his stablemates.
Yeah,
I thought that the power dynamic in those two things was really, really interesting.
I loved it. I agree. I love that you love this shit.
Yeah,
I really do.
And. Because if you look at, I think the three of us like out of wrestling, we all like wrestling, but we're very different people.
Yeah.
I mean, you like.
Are we talking the three of us?
No, I mean, I certainly in terms of the three of us that run our company,
right.
We like very different things, which is one of the reasons that our product most of the time seems to work and people seem to enjoy it is because we all come with it from different perspectives.
Yeah.
If we were all governed by one perspective, it'd be odd. Which is why I find it odd that any wrestling companies are run by one person.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I just find it odd. I just think it's weird.
And again, it's the stuff there. This is as much as a lot of indie wrestling fans can hate the WWE. Part of the thing of learning, going from indie into the WWE, is learning about where the cameras are and learning all these different things. And people can say that they love or hate that, but one of the greatest moves of recent years. Is all about where the camera is. It's in the RKO out of nowhere.
Yep.
The RKO is only out of nowhere on TV. In a stadium, Randy Orton's. Randy Orton stood there.
Oh, that's so true.
It's only on
so
TV.
Wise.
It's only on TV. But it's one of the most classic, amazing things. And that's all. And we all enjoy that. Even indie fans enjoy that. So
we actually had an Aleister Black version of that in this match as well, with Cole trying to pick himself up using the chair as a prop, and then in comes Aleister Black with his running knee or shining wizard, whatever it was, through the chair onto Adam Cole.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's perfect. But I mean the double stomp through the table. I can't not mention that because that was just the most. Just had my mouth. Through the announcers, and it just absolutely amazing. And Ranello's reaction of "Holy bleep, indeed!" just wonderful.
I think the whole the double stomp thing always bothers me because I know I know the Aleister Black Paul Robinson double stomp story from our first ever ballroom show, where Paul Robinson was really ill, and obviously Aleister Black's double stomp is just not a fun move to take.
No.
It's safe, but it's not fun to take. But I think we found out about 2 weeks later that Paul had an inflamed spleen, and if he'd have taken the move on one side of his body, could have been really, really in trouble.
Good Lord.
You know, so if you if you can do a move that can potentially put Paul Robinson out of commission, then you are a scary man.
Just I've got to give a little story now of that's Paul Robinson related that I did tweet, and it just amused me. I was out at the shops and I bumped into Paul Robinson and his lovely missus, and he was buying an ironing board, and it's testament to Robinson's career that my instant thought was, and I said, "Oh, have you got a match?" And he's like, "Oh, just got to do some ironing." Didn't cross my mind that he's buying it for ironing. Obviously, he's buying an ironing board for a match. He's going to put someone through it or smash someone. It's like, no, I've just got to do the ironing. I was like, all right, mate, see you later.
Obviously, there was interference in this match, so the other members of Undisputed Era came out, and that was equalised by Sanity, including a big old Killian Dane suicide dive, which I always like seeing.
Yeah.
Good lad. And again, great match. Would have been match of the show for me on loads of other cards, but then it was followed by my favourite wrestler in WWE at the minute.
Which one? Both of them?
Almas, who I...
You've been banging on about Almas ever since he got there.
Yeah, and I think I've been pretty
right.
And so
now, this is I, right, as the guest on this podcast, I'm giving you the opportunity to gloat now.
Yeah. Because, well, this is the thing I said to you, is like, I don't think I have many talents in wrestling. Like, I've winged it for this long, but I'm pretty good at being able to predict how good someone will be 3 years down the line. That's my one decent thing that I can do. Not just by his showing in this match, but we'll get into it in a bit, his showing in the Royal Rumble as well. Cien Almas is the second coming of Eddie Guerrero. He is wonderful, and his entrance was tremendous, because they're throwing back to the La Sombra stuff now and allowing him to come out with his La Sombra mask, which he's talking about Los Unpronounceables, so it's all I will also always call him that. it's just, and he's great. And he needed something to make him to, like, having watched him, I think I watched him wrestle probably 10 or 12 times actually live last year. And every single time.
He's always in the main event on the live shows.
Yeah.
Because he's brilliant.
Because everyone just looks at him and goes, he's amazing.
And it, for whatever reason, it wasn't connecting as well as they would have liked it to.
No.
And then I have to say, I think Almas's character arc since he came into NXT has been so enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, he came in and it was, his gimmick was he wore a trilby and some different trousers. Then
braces.
And then they had the gimmick of him being a part of, and again, which is probably the Guerrero connotations can come from that side of it as well, because Eddie Guerrero was famously an absolute party animal. And then got the best days of his career in WWE. Certainly not in ECW, he was still a party animal, and WCW was still a party animal. But his best days of his career in latter WWE was after he cleaned himself up.
And
I like the idea that they've had him as a party animal for a bit, and then he's not a party animal, and now he's got a woman behind him who is just a brilliant character in her own right, in Zelina Vega.
Yeah.
Which means that he doesn't need to talk, because he's not much of a talker. The English isn't great. He's not much of a talker. But in terms of a worker, oh, he's good. Like, I mean, I think they all knew he was good when he was signed, but he's next level brilliant. And again, you could say he can do a match where he doesn't do loads and loads of high spots, or he can do a match like this where he does loads of technical wrestling, loads of really, really good wrestling, loads of really, really good sports entertainment, and a ton of high spots and a ton of stuff that looks like it'll kill you.
The credit needs to be given as well there to Zelina Vega, as it's finding that simple thing that's all it needed. You can have someone who's great and doesn't quite click, and then you find that one small thing. For Almas, it was Zelina Vega. For Braun Strowman, it was pushing things over. But you find that one thing that just clicks and makes them the most over thing in the world. And yeah, I love it.
It's Yeah, and I love Johnny Gargano as well, who's another one of my favourite wrestlers in the world. But just a wonderful match. Both of them wonderful in it.
Selena Vega is my wife's favourite character on NXT.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant. And I like the fact that she's awesome. She's not positioned... And again, this is how wrestling has changed over the last decade. She's not eye candy. She is...
There's no romantic attachment.
No, she is smart businesswoman. Mm-hmm. And gets involved and does Hurricane Rana,
and she's in charge.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's the whole thing's great.
She's I think she's probably quite a identifiable and aspirational character.
So this is the thing. So you know, sometimes people struggle making the connection when they go for NXT. Some people are better on main roster than they are in NXT.
Right.
Alexa Bliss is a great example of this.
100%.
Right. Is the good stuff about her character is magnified much more on an entertainment product rather than what is much more of a pure wrestling product. Someone like Shinsuke Nakamura has taken a while to find his feet because whilst we're super wrestling fans who love him because he was in New Japan and he's Nakamura, like if you're flicking through channels in America, he's not necessarily your cup of tea. Right,
Elias is another great example.
He's bang on, mate.
Zero interest in NXT. On
perfect the main example.
He's my favourite thing in wrestling at the moment.
He is wonderful on television. Absolutely wonderful. And I think what's going to make Almas brilliant when he gets moved up is obviously they're already thinking about this because of how long he got in the Rumble. But when he gets moved up, Vega will go with him.
Hmm.
And will mean that he'll get over on mainstream television as well.
Completely.
So he'll tick both boxes. He'll tick our box of wrestling fan, he'll tick entertainment box as well because of her. Mm-hmm. And his future is very, 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 very bright indeed.
You're far better at predicting future stars than championship manager.
Chono Samba.
They never got it right. Everyone I signed on championship manager that was going to be a future star never worked out. But yeah.
Tonton Zola Makuku.
Yeah.
I played a lot of Championship
Managers.
Yeah,
same.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Dexter Blackstock was always a big one for me.
Was he? I never signed him.
He raised the World Cup for England several times as still at Millwall. And great stuff. Anyway,
tweet me and Pip your favourite ever signing on Football Manager or Championship Manager who never actually went on to any success.
Yeah. Please don't tag me. I don't care.
Although, on a football note, my football team did avenge your football team this week.
Correct, yes. I'm a Woking fan.
Yeah. And you went to Peterborough.
I went to Peterborough to see the FA Cup second round replay.
Yep. Yes, it was, because this was
the second round replay. Woking battered Peterborough at home and couldn't win. I think maybe we missed a penalty in the closing stages.
What was the score in the end?
I want to say 2-2.
Yeah.
It might have been 1-1. Yeah.
And you wanted to say, what was the finish?
Yeah. What was the finish?
Roll up.
What's your finish, kid?
Fucking roll up.
It's a sloppy roll up.
Yeah. And then I went to Peterborough on a cold Tuesday night. Shame it wasn't Stoke. And we were in the game, we were in the game again at 2-2. And then the fitness of the professional side, or the higher division side rather, told, and we ended up losing 5-2.
Damn. Yeah, and
it was heartbreaking.
And then Peterborough beat
Aston Villa, and I'm convinced that we would have beaten Aston Villa in the third round.
Massive club, Aston Villa.
Hi Tony.
our friend Tony thinks they're a massive club. They're not. Just because you've got a big stadium don't mean you're a massive club. You haven't won anything for years. And then we got Peterborough in the fourth round. We put out our reserves, including another player we've signed from the French second division. Everyone's gone, it's only £2 million, he can't be any good. Set up 2, scored 2. Welcome to the club for Senior Diabate. We won 5-1. It's the cup draw tonight. Let's hope we get someone easy, because I'd really like us to win the FA Cup. Because now I'm allowed to dream, because we've won the league in my lifetime. So,
because if you follow the linear FA Cup, you support whoever knocks your side out. I now support Leicester. Yeah,
it's brilliant. So, good work. And Millwall drew with Rochdale.
We're still in it at the moment. So let's see what the draw says.
Was it last year you knocked us out, or was it year before?
Yeah,
because I remember I was doing a gig in the Leicester Comedy Festival, I think, and I remember messaging you going, because I'm quite sporting. If a mate's team beats us, normally I'm like, hands up, I deserve it.
Should we go? If Millwall end up drawing Leicester, should we go?
Yeah, all over that.
Oh, let's do it. Let's hire a box.
All right.
Perfect. We'll do it.
I don't know how much a box is. That's not legally binding.
Welcome to Tuesday Night Goals.
Oh, let's do a football podcast. Let's not. The other thing that, of course, happened in this main event, as well as it being just fantastic and so many great near falls, and obviously with Gargano using a submission move, that being applied, and Almas just making the ropes and whatever, is Candice LeRae getting involved, which everyone went nuts for, because Candice is married to Johnny Gargano. She is Mrs. Johnny Gargano.
Which they have made no secret of.
Nope. It was quite nice when the one time Candice worked for us, it was quite nice being able to say to someone, "How's your fella?" Because you know Johnny, and we like Johnny a lot. So it was like, it was a really nice thing to do, having never met Candice until that point. She's great, and has been one of the best stars on the indies, male or female, for a long time. Yep. So delighted that she's there. And really nice, because her and her husband can spend time together and have similar travel schedules. So that obviously interaction happened to sort of cancel Vega out a little bit. And then, end of the match, Gargano rightly getting a standing ovation, walking back up the entrance, and all of a sudden appearing behind him is a Vietnam veteran on a crutch that you soon realise is Tommaso Ciampa, looking even more insane than when he first turned.
Looks wonderful.
Which is amazing, because this is one of my favourite storylines. Like, I can't wait to see where this goes. Partly because I love both the wrestlers massively. Tommaso in particular, I absolutely adore as a wrestler. I love that he now follows no one on Twitter.
Brilliant. Not one person.
Not one person. Brilliant. Slightly sad, because he used to follow me. Doesn't follow me. Doesn't follow anyone. Changed his Twitter name to Blackheart.
So I think this is really interesting, the Blackheart thing. He was obviously wearing a T-shirt, which is Blackheart, with a couple of the letters starred out for some reason. I don't know which letters. A and... A, probably.
Yeah.
Mm.
Blackheart.
I wonder if it's because Gargano. I wonder if that's because Gargano has two A's in his name and he doesn't want any association with him.
I don't know. I think you're probably overthinking it now.
Probably not.
Ciampa's had a lot of time to overthink it.
Yeah, right. He looked ill, I thought. Like jaundiced, the Blackheart thing. Like, is, if you take it literally, like, he's got poison in his heart, and the poison's taking over. He looks like that hatred has been festering and eating him up for like 8 months.
Yeah,
and it's poisoning him from the inside, and that came across in his expression. And
I think this is the SA pit.
No, I'm nearly done. And even the colour of his skin, I don't know if he was made up differently just to get that over, or whether it was just a light that was on him.
That's why I said the Vietnam veteran thing, because he was wearing combat trousers as well. And on a crutch, it was just like, it made me think of the Tom Cruise film Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
It's just, he was on screen for, 25, 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Amazing characterisation from him. What I'd like to think is when he's hit Gargano with the crutch, and Gargano's down being tended to, and his Ciampa's just staring right through him. It's not hatred. He's just thinking to himself, "I'm still injured. I've lost my crutch.
Yeah,
I haven't thought this through. Yeah. How do I get away from here?"
So he injured his knee at TakeOver Chicago, didn't he?
8 months ago.
8 months ago. And knowing what we know about knee injuries, it's normally 8 or 9 months, isn't it?
Correct.
So what we would expect is TakeOver over WrestleMania weekend.
You would expect the grudge match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else are we expecting for Mania? Because I'm expecting... I mean, obviously, I think there's TV tapings this week that will set it up.
And there's more in March.
For me, I'd expect maybe Almas against Aleister Black.
I think that. I think I messaged you when the options for the NXT awards were out. We're like, wow, so Aleister's up for every award other than female.
Yeah.
and rightfully so. But it felt he's up for so much, he's going to win a load. His destiny is quite clear at this stage.
I'm sure we've seen him and Almas on a house show last year, and it was great.
Yep.
And with the right build and everything, it could be absolutely stunning.
Yeah. I think that match would make the most sense.
Yeah.
Because I think maybe you get to a point with Aleister Black where he's still undefeated in the entire time that he's been there. I know he got taken out of that elimination match, but he wasn't.
He's lost by count out.
Has he?
Yes. He's lost by count out that time.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, hasn't been pinned, hasn't submitted.
Yeah,
he's been incredibly strong.
Mm-hmm.
by the writing. If he doesn't get, I mean, arguably he should have had a title match before now. Obviously they've been keeping him away from it a little bit. If he doesn't get the title match now, you start to ask why.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, completely.
Yeah, I think so. I think they may well do Moon Baszler again, but they might do that on TV because there's enough TV between now and then. Because mm-hmm. Then the other, I think, big option for a women's match is Moon against Sane or Moon against Storm against Sane against Baszler in a four-way or something like that.
Yeah,
that's a potential, I suppose.
I have to say, I don't know what the stories are that they've been doing on TV.
Mm-hmm. But just from this weekend, they're positions Sane as a big player. She's one of the few NXT people to turn up.
Yes.
See, I would if Velveteen Dream keeps getting the reaction of being a kind of almost anti-hero, sort of people are going to cheer for him anyway, just do him and Adam Cole.
Mm.
That'd be great. But that's, it depends on
the only question I had over Aleister Black is what the plan is with Cole, because Cole clearly is he should be a champion.
Yeah.
He's wonderful and he's really level.
This is what highlights the fact that Almas is champion even more, is if you didn't know about his history in Mexico and you hadn't have seen him as much as we had last year and realised how good he is, like, there's plenty of people who would have gone, well, like, there's all these people who should be champion instead of him. Why is this Mexican guy champion? Well, because he's actually really the best, and he's now getting over. I think he started getting over in Brooklyn with his match with Gargano in Brooklyn, was the point where everyone went, oh, hang on a minute. Like, a lot of people already knew, we did, but then there was a lot of people who just went, oh God, he's good, isn't he? Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't, everyone loves Eddie Guerrero, remembers Eddie Guerrero's WWE run fantastically, but the first couple of years he was there, he wasn't at the top of the card, he wasn't the main event,
completely.
And then he became it, by basically throwing himself into as much stuff as possible and just being brilliant, so... There goes TakeOver.
Just one thing, again, there's always something small on the matches I like, but I really enjoyed in that match the use of just getting out of the way of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not used enough. I thought Almas was amazing at it and Gargano as well. There was numerous big spots where they just stepped to one side. And it's, again, it's simple and realistic and clever.
And it's great when you've got they've had two matches before, so they know what each other
do.
That's where the storytelling comes from. Yeah. That's where the emotional investment comes from.
Yeah.
Years ago this is a good sentence, I was doing some knife fighting training
hang on
just knife fighting training, but
this is the thing. I used to work with a guy who used to do it. He was very high up in the jiu-jitsu world, and one day he had loads of scars on his hand and we were like, why'd you get them? And we were like, knife fighting.
But one of the things I loved about it and that I didn't expect was the first thing that they said was, right, first thing we're going to talk about is if you can get away.
Yeah.
So if there's any option of running away, and meaning it throughout the whole thing, if you're fighting someone and they've got enough, if at any point there's an option that you can go out that door, then that's what you do. You go out that door. And I always thought any kind of martial arts thing is about beating people up and you're doing this. They were constant, can you get out now? Because if you can, if you've cleared your path, then go. And I love that coming into this, in that if you've got an option of stepping to one side, why try and counter a move or anything else if you just go, oh, just land on your ass, mate.
Yeah, well, it's like in Final Fantasy, you can run away, can't you?
Yeah,
run away.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds.
Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The Royal Rumble. Are you guys, is it your favourite pay-per-view of the year? Because it's always mine.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And this year, it got two Rumbles.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing.
Twice the Rumble satisfaction.
Yeah.
There was a pre-show. There was three matches.
I haven't seen any.
Three matches on the pre-show. John is excluded from this. We'll deal with the pre-show super quick.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was. I believe there was going to be a cruiserweight title match. It might have been on the pre-show. It might have been elsewhere. It was for obvious reasons pulled from the show. Mm-hmm. There was a cruiserweight match on the show featuring a friend of the podcast. So it's Kalisto, Gran Metalik, Lince Dorado beat Drew Gulak, Jack Gallagher, and TJP. Storyline here is that Gulak. There's two storylines. One, Gulak doesn't like cruiserweights wrestling as cruiserweights. I fucking love Drew Gulak so much.
Smashing it at the moment.
Do you know what I'd love to book?
Drew Gulak.
Drew Gulak versus Volta.
Yeah.
That would be the best.
Yeah.
If you've never seen Drew Gulak's indie work, go and watch it. It's brilliant. So Drew Gulak doesn't want cruiserweights to wrestle as cruiserweights.
He's got his no-fly zone.
No-fly zone.
He doesn't want people off the top ropes.
He does...
chanting, right?
Yeah, no chanting. No, he does PowerPoint presentations.
Love it.
He is tremendous.
I bet he's a man who loves a spreadsheet.
Yeah, but he knows how to do a VLOOKUP. And the other storyline on that team is that Gallagher, if you look through Jack's Twitter feed, Gallagher and Gulak just think TJP is useless.
Brilliant.
It's wonderful. There's a you'll be able to see a gif of this already. There's a great moment where Jack gets carried away and goes to the second rope to deliver a splash and misses by a million fucking miles.
But while he goes to it, Gulak is saying,
No, this is so funny.
Fly just telling him not to. And then, yeah.
It's like, don't do it. And then when he doesn't hit it, it's like, I told you not to do it. Brilliant.
When he tags out, he says, "No, you were right." And yeah. Actually tags him out. It was beautiful. It was
so
beautiful
good. TJP tags himself in off of Gulak blind, comes in and then gets beaten by the Silly Del Sol from Kalisto.
Yeah.
Meaning that they've still got reason to have a go at TJP. I really like TJP as a worker. I think he's great. I think he's kind of got lost in the sort of 205. Recently, but he's still a very good. I mean, when he was the first cruiserweight champion, he was fantastic.
Yeah,
so, you know, but I think he got hurt and stuff. So, next match was we mentioned this kind of before. The Revival, who just look quite small at the minute. They did on Raw 25 as well. They came out. I was like, they're tiny. But then you remember that when I was a kid, I thought X-Pac was tiny.
Mm.
X-Pac's 6'1".
Yeah.
So you forget that. You never used to really be able to make it in wrestling unless you were over 6 foot tall. Yeah. Like someone like Mick Foley, 6'4", Regal, 6'3", and they look like small guys.
Small guys, 100%.
So you watch it now, like I think Shawn Michaels is 6'2", and like you watch it and go, this is when you see people who have been on the indies for ages and are less than 6 foot, they just do seem really short.
Tiny, yeah.
So Revival beat Gallows and Anderson. A lot of knee work on Carl Anderson, who I still maintain is one of the most underrated wrestlers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite an old school match. But the thing I really want to bring up, because there's not loads to talk about in this match, is your tweet that you put out about the Revival's
It was tough.
Tights.
I was watching it with my mate Stu and his wife Leanne, and she highlighted it because she was actually playing a computer game, I think, and looking up every now and then at the fight. And she went, "What's that say on the back of their tights?" And their slogan is "No flips, just fists." On the back of their tights, they've got that in a circle, and in tiny writing it says "No flips," and then in big writing it says "Just fists." And it was going like you've so, and
the world's first glove puppet tag team.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It did seem like a poor choice, but they go hard all day and night. So. So is what it is, I guess.
There you go, mate.
Oh my god.
And final match on the pre-show was Bobby Roode retaining his United States Championship against Mojo Sticker Under the Eyes Rawley.
I don't think he has the stickers anymore.
What do they achieve?
I don't know. I think it's mirror, because he used to play football, didn't he? So I think it's mirror in the eye black, and it was just people sometimes try gimmicks that don't don't come off.
I'm just a big fan of Nelly.
Aren't we all?
Who is?
I heard
who
that sad, why you broke into hip hop was mainly Nelly.
Mainly
wasn't
Nelly.
It?
Yeah.
I think that was one of the lyrics on "Thou Shalt Not Kill," wasn't it? "Thou Shalt Not Question Nelly."
It was bizarrely on Saturday night.
I thought you were about to say, "Yeah, that's right."
Bizarrely, on Saturday night in my club night in Oxford, I was playing a POS song, who's a great indie punk rapper, and I mixed in a Nelly song off the back of it because it just went perfectly, and I was so happy, and everyone did go, "Hey, must fit his eyes." It was wonderful.
I thought we'd get a Nelly reference in this.
Yeah, who knows?
So I think what they're going to do with Bobby Roode is have him just do open challenges for the US title.
Has he done more than one?
This was his first one. They said it was the first one.
So he made a big deal of it.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
I was about to accuse you of being the Twitter personified there for a moment.
No. I'm basing it on actual stuff they said on commentary.
Awesome.
It was billed as his first open challenge.
I love open challenge series. We did it with Rampage Brown when he won the Atlas title.
Yeah. Also means you get a big old pot when you change it to someone that no one's expecting.
And John Cena's US title open challenge was wonderful. Yeah, it was fantastic.
And also, sometimes if you... Because what's happened with that title is obviously Dolph Ziggler abandoned it. So I think it's quite nice to build a title back up.
Yeah.
And John Cena did it perfectly with the US title.
Yeah, he really did.
And Bobby Roode, as I think we've said on the podcast before, is one of the most professional people in wrestling, and one of the most... Someone I... Until he went to NXT, never that bothered about, because I didn't watch a load of TNA. I was never that bothered about him. Didn't think he was very interesting. Having seen him so much last year and seeing how hard he works, he's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
He's absolutely great, Bobby Roode. Really, really good guy. So, to the main show. First match was AJ Styles retaining his title in a handicap match against very bitter Kevin Owens and very bitter Sami Zayn. I must quickly talk about Kevin Owens on the pre-show at this point.
I was going to say, they were just amazing.
Oh my God, yeah. Like,
so good.
So did you see him on... So on the pre-show...
Sorry, listener, I was shaking my head there, sorry.
So on the pre-show, they were doing the social media lounge thing where, you know, sometimes they put them in this actual sort of darkened room. They've just got them sat on their phones in a locker room, just checking through them. And I follow Kevin Owens on Twitter, and he'd been just replying to people just being a dickhead to them because he's brilliant at Twitter. And he doesn't like Pete Rosenberg.
And do you know the reason? Because it's brilliant.
Yes, I do.
Is it the War Machine?
It's the War Machine, right?
So Rosenberg tweeted saying, "I can't believe WWE have signed War Machine. He's a domestic violence convict, blah, blah. Confusing the tag team War Machine with the former MMA fighter who changed his name to War Machine, who is now in prison for beating up a Christy Mack." He got a lot of stick and was like, "Look, I don't watch a Japanese wrestling. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah." And then Kevin Owens did an interview on the Jericho podcast. He said, "Oh, I don't watch a lot of Japanese wrestling, so this. Rosenberg then retweeted that saying, "Oh, are you all going to hate on Kevin Owens now because he doesn't watch Japanese wrestling? He must know nothing about wrestling." To which Kevin Owens then retweeted going, "If I was employed by a company purely to talk about what they're doing, I would do my research before making tweets." So he tried to get everyone on side by going, "Look, Kevin Owens doesn't even..." He's like, "I'm a wrestler. I'm not. That's not my job." But it's
so
brilliant.
So during the pre-show, it's genuinely one of my favourite moments of the year. So during the pre-show, Renee keeps asking them questions and stuff like that, and Jerry Lawler's there, and they're taking questions off Jerry Lawler. And I forget who the other person there at that point was. And at one point,
is this still in the social media lounge?
So they're in the lounge, cut into the table. So the table are...
So it's the preview show.
Okay.
So it's them doing the preview panel are talking to them. So tells who is with him, and he goes, "Pete Rosenberg's there. I don't want to talk to Pete. Like, I just don't want to talk
He's
to
like,
Pete.
We will not talk
we
to
will
Pete
not
Rosenberg.
Talk to Pete." And then it keeps going on, at one point, Pete tries to ask him a question, and they absolutely refuse to answer it. And then, and I forget the exact wording of this,
Kevin Owens just says, Pete Rosenberg, he's paying for the privilege of being there.
Yeah.
He's not even...
he said, I have sources that say Pete Rosenberg is paying to be on the panel, to be involved with the WWE.
And the whole internet just went, oh, shit, son.
You know, wow. Absolutely amazing. And the fact that, again, as soon as he's... Because the first person that Renee tried to hand over to was Pete, and Kevin was instantly like, King's there, isn't he? We'll talk to King. King, has King got a question? And then they're respectful to King, but yeah.
Yeah, like, drop that like line. proper, no secrets hidden, dickheads to him.
Yeah.
I have no issue with Pete Rosenberg. I don't really listen to his podcast or anything like that. He seems to do an all right job when he's doing this stuff. But,
good though.
Oh my god! Like I was watching it, and I was quite tired because we've done a show, and I was quite sort of chilled out. I just eating some food, and I was like, I hope I'm going to be able to stay awake. And that happened. I'm like, I'm fucking on board for the rest of this show.
It was Sebastian level of body in someone. it was outrageous.
Shout out to Sebastian, who thought he was going to die in a hurricane in Hawaii or a typhoon.
Yeah,
and also
and the nuclear warning wasn't
and
it?
The nuclear.
Yeah, sorry,
that was a weird one. So. Oh my god!
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it?
Like, there's gifts of it already.
Yes,
I'm just going to go home and watch it.
Yeah,
I'm watching Pete Rosenberg had to do that thing where he reacted to something and he was clearly annoyed about it.
Yeah,
but had to pretend he wasn't annoyed.
Like, oh, it's all wrestling. He's a heel.
But like, I mean, very funny.
Wonderful.
This match was I went into this going, I don't know what's going to happen here. And it's a clunky thing to kind of put together because the storytelling of why there is a handicap match and how bitter Owens and Zayn are is brilliant and makes perfect sense. Absolutely on board with that. But it's still a handicap match, which it negates you getting a decent one-on-one out of it and whatever. But I really like the finish of Owens taking Owens trying to tag in. They're not actually physically tagging in.
Yeah.
Being a dickhead, getting in the ring and trying to wrestle, then getting pinned, and then complaining he wasn't actually legal is really smart and fits in with them being dickheads.
Yeah, and fits in with the fact that they're the heels that people kind of love as well. So it is legit. He hadn't tagged in.
No,
that's not a legit result. So it's kind of good, but it's also...
But the camera work it required, really well, because he was so close to actually touching.
Really close.
Like, it was proper Sistine Chapel shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, it is the camera crew that have to film the Rumble. And the classic kind of, has one foot touch. Clearly that's their speciality is the...
Yeah, the real crew are there going, right, we've got two Rumble matches to film. What do we need to know about this? What do you mean there's stuff in the other matches as well?
Yeah.
We were talking before about regular moves that people all of a sudden make really good.
Yeah.
You know what Sami Zayn's done in the last few weeks? Made his Blue Thunder Bomb amazing.
Yeah.
Because he won a match with it for the first time in years, the other day. But then when he did it on Styles, it felt like he rotated him like 27 times before he hit it.
It looked amazing.
Really enjoyed that. I also really enjoyed, again, I agree that you miss out on a good singles match or two good singles matches essentially, but I enjoyed a few of the little combination bits. And when AJ was in the corner and Kevin monkey flipped him and then he landed in and Hurricane Rana'd or landed straight with his legs on Sammy and Hurricane Rana'd him was just a beautiful little spot. But yeah.
I think, is it like a bold prediction? I think because Sammy ended up going into the Rumble later, but Owens didn't.
Yeah.
And Owens didn't do, Zayn did the majority of the work in this match as well.
Yeah.
I think we will get Owens and Zayn at WrestleMania against each other.
Right.
I think they'll break up again. And we'll get them at WrestleMania. I hope we do, because it's a match I never tire of seeing.
Yeah, his tweet was because Sammy when he goes into Rumble goes, I've got this, and then Kevin's tweet was just, I thought you had this.
Yeah, at Sammy Zayn. So they're telling.
Can't tell if it's a jokey or a.
Yeah. Also, when they were in the social media lounge, when they just got tired of answering questions and started speaking in French.
Yeah. they finished off a whole load in French beautifully.
Their work as dickheads on the show is just like.
That's why it'd be such a shame for that match to happen already.
Yeah, I agree.
So actually, one thing that I really like about Havoc and Haskins as a tag team is that Jimmy very calmly walks out, and then Haskins is just like hyperactive, just sprinting everywhere, looking terrifying. And there's a similar dynamic with Owens and Zayn when they come out, in that Zayn is properly showing off and being a dickhead, and
Owens is just walking behind him with that look of, I'm going to fucking murder people. That's great. Yeah. I was pleased that Styles retained. Again, I've mentioned this loads of times on Tuesday Night Joe in the past, that Styles was someone who didn't do loads for me until he went to New Japan, and then he started doing stuff for me, and now I'm fully on board with him and his beautifully straightened hair. So,
yes, I noticed that.
Very straight hair. It's like someone's bought him a pair of GHDs and he's never noticed them before. Like, really straight. Next up, we had very little on this. The next match, which was the Usos retaining the tag team, the SmackDown tag team titles against
American Beta.
Wow.
against Chad Gable, who I still maintain is one of the best wrestlers in the company.
He's amazing.
And Shelton Benjamin, who is great and has a great, you know, he's in his 40s now. He's not in the same sort of level.
Is he?
Yeah. He was old when he started wrestling because he was an amateur wrestling coach. Yeah. When he became a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
So no one noticed you opening your chocolate box.
Sorry, it's not chocolate, it's lunch. Anyone want some?
No, mate, I'm presenting a fucking podcast.
Right. I'm sorry, it's crankling. Crankling?
What?
Crankling?
What the fuck?
Sorry, it's making a noise. I've had 3.5 hours sleep and I need fuel.
Okay. It's cool fuel as well, isn't it?
Oh.
Or is it not? Oh, feed. That's what it's called.
He's got it in a John nose bag.
John
we've given John his feed.
Come on, John. Come on, John. You can have a sugar cube if you eat all that. My wife rescued a honeybee the other day. Like she got. So there was a bee like struggling outside our front door, and she took a little saucer and put like sugar and water out there for it. I'm going to save a bee's life. I'm like, I'm aware I'm a vegetarian, but it's a bee. She came over about 3 or 4 days later and went, oh, that bee whose life I saved was flying around outside. I went, are you sure it might be a different
bee? She tagged
bee.
It.
Might be a different bee.
No, tiny little can of spray paint.
The Usos versus Gable and Benjamin. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match that finished in 2 straight falls, making me think briefly we were in Mexico, where that happens all the time.
Yeah, I loved it. Really
now, I've got a theory. They're doing this. Next couple of months there'll be another 2 out of 3 falls match that will finish in 2 straight falls, and it's to reset how people approach a 2 out of 3 falls match in order to give better credence to one further down the line, maybe at SummerSlam or something like that. That's my theory. I could be completely wrong.
That's the main note I made about it, that there was a proper fight to get the first fall, because I hate that when the first fall is a move that wouldn't have got your fall anywhere else.
Ages to get the first fall as
ages. Well. And then the fact that, again, number one, it was 2-0, it was 2 falls and done. And number 2, the second fall came quite quickly after the first fall. Because again, that's realistic. If you've just pinned someone, it's a good chance, or you've got a better chance of getting another pin quickly after that, because they're beaten up enough for you to get a pin.
Yeah.
So really enjoyed that.
It was just
really enjoyed it.
Theory of maybe they're resetting the concept, because sometimes you have to do that.
I just enjoyed switching up the formula of it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to mess with. I mean, the thing I dislike about tag team wrestling is how formulaic it can be.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know, heat, hot tag can get boring sometimes.
Yeah,
so,
completely.
Yes, then we had the Men's Rumble next, which immediately highlighted, I texted you, immediately highlighted everybody that something big was happening in the Women's Rumble at the end of it.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because we got catharsis at the end of the show, so that's fine. Imagine if nothing bigger had happened. Imagine if Roman Reigns had won the Women's Rumble.
Ellsworth had come in at 30.
And I love the layout of the show. I really enjoyed it. Like, once that was happening, it's like, well, yeah, actually, 2 Rumble matches in a row is hard. That's going to be hard to keep the energy for. So having a kind of, here's the first half main event, here's the second half main event, it's progress.
And let's be honest as well. The women's main, even if there wasn't the big thing that happened at the end, the women's main event, the Women's Rumble should have been the main event, because they've made a big deal. They've made a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Right? And either, times have changed. Like, women main event UFC shows all the time.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make a statement about it, and also they can never not do a Women's Rumble now.
Yeah.
Like, there's always got to be a Women's Rumble. You can't take it off now. You've given it.
And giving it the main event in this instance made it that exciting and that big a deal. I ate a chocolate every time Stephanie McMahon said the word history, and I'm now diabetic. So that's. But again, it's drilling that home that it's this. Yeah. It's the biggest thing.
So That was my first point. It did make me suspect there was a big angle of the women's match, mm-hmm. which I immediately messaged you and predicted nearly correctly.
Yeah.
Everyone on my Twitter feed seemed to enjoy this. I'm aware people will say, oh, how dare you enjoy a WWE show? But I do enjoy WWE shows because I'm a wrestling fan and I've been for 30-odd years. And this is a positive wrestling podcast, so I like to try and remind people. But I did enjoy it. I have one friend. Really
just on that, if you don't enjoy watching wrestling, stop watching it.
Yeah, it's a good point, mate.
And I made a note that I was like, I'm not sure if I'm willing to say on a podcast because of how angry the wrestling fans will get, but... This is the first time ever I enjoyed the main roster pay-per-view more than the NXT pay-per-view.
Get out.
Yeah, no, I know, it's outrageous, but it was. I really enjoyed it. It was really good fun. And yeah, the Rumble's the first,
first step on it. If the Rumble had been 4 hours instead of six,
yeah,
I would have agreed with you.
Yeah.
The brevity of takeover shows is often what I enjoy about them, because it's five matches and they're all dead good.
Yeah.
There is...
And they're all given time, and they can do good stuff.
And there's loads of dead good stuff on the Rumble,
but
equally there's and I'm not knocking anything on it, but there's a pre-show that like doesn't really do loads.
I'm not counting the pre-show in that pre-show aside. I enjoy it,
but it's very very close. I love that Almas match so much, but equally I love both Rumbles. I love the three-way. I really enjoy Styles and Owens and Zayn. So most of my Twitter feed seem to enjoy it. My friend Tony, who I briefly mentioned before, who won't mind me saying this, and I'm going to have as a guest on the podcast at some point because we're going to do something special with another podcast that we used to do together. He tweeted, because some people just like surprises in a Rumble. That's what they want. They want Bubba Ray Dudley and the Honky Tonk Man, and that's what they want, right? Now, there were a lot of surprises in this Rumble, but if you think about the framing of this in the rest of the show, there were only 18 women announced for the Women's Rumble, so there was always going to be a ton of surprises. And the clever way, that we'll come to this a bit, the clever way they actually did the big surprise wasn't actually in the Rumble, okay? So,
which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, so that's smart. There were still surprises. The Hurricane was a good surprise. That was fun. Loads of people lost their mind over the Hurricane. But you're not going to get anything really, really huge in this, because you want to frame the other surprises later on better, I think. I think the surprise they did have, Adam Cole, was a big surprise. Wasn't expecting that, with his ribs taped up. Mm-hmm. That was really cool.
And Almas, who was
outside of Finn Balor, is the MVP in that Rumble.
Mm.
Balor's the MVP because he was in 100%. There for ages and was wonderful and has only helped elevate him.
I was going to say, it's the part of the almost the rehabilitation of the Finn Balor character is having him in that.
But it was always a thing when I was a kid that the person who lasted longest in the Rumble was nearly always going to have a good year after it. That's pretty much how it always worked. And again, proof of, you know, we know Finn really well. He's a great worker and he was really awesome in that. And because it was in Philly, I felt WWE dealt with it being in Philly really, really well. So Nakamura winning it, he ended up looking like the biggest babyface.
Yeah.
Because he was up, and he was up against two babyfaces.
Yeah.
But just that the Philly crowd doesn't like. So the fact that Cena eliminated Balor made Cena, I mean, Cena wasn't as big a heel as Reigns at this point, but it made him.
Yeah.
And then Nakamura eliminating those guys was just, it was wonderful. And again, when people slag Roman Reigns off, like Roman Reigns' work in this match to make Nakamura look great was brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need to give the guy grief. He does his job perfectly well.
Yeah.
You're preaching to the choir here.
I know. I mean, so as an indie wrestling promoter, someone like Roman Reigns would absolutely not work in progress, because he's not what we're about. Like Adam Cole would work, has worked perfectly in progress.
Sure.
That's what we're about. And I love that when I'm doing that. But one day I'm going to take my son to WWE shows, and at that point there'll be someone who's the equivalent of a John Cena or Roman Reigns, who when my son's 6, 7, 8 years old will think is a superhero.
Mm.
That's what wrestling's about.
Yeah.
In that context.
Mm. Yeah, certainly in that context. Rey Mysterio was a big old surprise.
Yeah, huge surprise.
I wonder if he'll be doing 5-star. I wonder. We were talking about this when we were walking down from the tube. He looked amazing.
Yes, he really did.
And he hit his moves better, because the one thing with Rey, Ray's never been a sloppy worker, but Ray, when he started getting knee injuries and a back injury and stuff, he wasn't...
There wasn't as much impact.
Compared to what he was like in 96, 97, 98 in ECW and WCW. But I know he didn't have a long run in it, but there was that. He just felt really, really good. And then there was that brilliant shot of, I think, the last six or seven, where it was a generational thing.
Yep. Yeah, that was really nice.
Which was beautiful, and you had and you could see different generations of wrestling in there. It was so well put together.
Yeah.
But up until that point, I think a lot of people were... There's not been loads of surprises, and it's just another Royal Rumble.
But there was loads of good stuff, though. That's the thing that annoys me. I love the Heath Slater stuff, just everyone just kicking him on the way down repeatedly. I love that they'd cleared the ring just for Elias to do a little song. Like, they'd made that story work, that everyone's wiped out, and then it hits one and it's Elias. It's like, things like that were beautifully done.
Yeah. It's, I think it's the last... there's been some rumbles where you get down to the last four and then it's done pretty quick.
Yeah.
With this, it felt down to the last six and it felt like it went on for another 20 minutes.
Nice.
which I really like, because they were telling stories, and you could hear people going, "Oh no, I hope this person doesn't get eliminated." It was really powerful. Yeah. It was really cool.
The one annoyance I had was, again, the thinking through of logic of any of it. As we mentioned, was the fact that someone like Seth Rollins is in there when he's got another match to come that night that isn't as important, and it's that thought of thinking it through logically. He can't win it, because you can't win the Rumble and then go, oh, you've got, and like, you've just won, you're holding the FA Cup, and they say, before you leave Wembley, Stevenage are here, so if you could just play them, we'd really appreciate that. It's like, but I've just won the FA Cup. Yeah, but if you just play Stevenage quickly, all right, we'll do that then, I guess.
I think
there's no logic in it. You couldn't,
and it did have that. And we'll get to this in a minute, but it affected the heat of the next match. And I think as well, if you're watching it going, who's going to be the big surprise? Who on the roster am I going to get to see? Who I wasn't expecting to see, and then you see three people that you know you're going to see again later on.
That was the thing.
A little bit.
The note I made there
was
with a question mark was. Wasted slots, and it's exactly that. I feel they could have slung an NXT person in to get a pop, to get an exciting moment, and not Sheamus or Seth. Again, Seth was in there for a long time, so I guess
the Sheamus one did because he was literally a second.
That the Raw tag title match was probably going to be on the pre-show,
right?
So it would have made slightly more sense, those guys being in the Rumble, but them having to can the Cruiserweight title match from the pre-show. Yeah.
And the US title final was meant to be on this show as well, and I think they moved that up to combat and get around the Cruiser thing.
And
well,
like you say about the NXT things, we know from what we've done before, they send the NXT guys home after TakeOver. They don't they don't stick around for the Rumble.
No, because a lot of them are back at the PC on a Monday. So
their Sunday is their travel day and day off.
Yeah. Jimmy Havoc tweeted last night, "For fuck's sake, it's the first time I've really hated John Cena. Fuck you, Cena." when he threw Finn Balor out with him being really good friends with Finn. And it just really popped me when I saw the tweet this morning. I was like, why does he? Oh, yeah, that's why. His mate could have won the Rumble.
Yeah.
I didn't think Nakamura would win. Balor was my pick to win it. My pick to win the two were Balor and Asuka, which I tweeted before, so I had 50% success rate. I thought it was Balor's time to win. But I think him lasting as long as he did was great, and did the job pretty much as well. I think it was interesting what colour he was wearing.
It was sort of a burgundy.
He was wearing William Regal burgundy, as I like to call it. The colour that... Daniel Bryan wore for years, because he got given a pair of tights and a pair of boots by Regal. So
and that Pete Dunne wears.
And what Pete Dunne wears for that same reason. Yeah. Just something I noticed. I was like, oh, burgundy. Also, the minute I saw him wearing burgundy, it made me realise Pete Dunne was probably not in the Rumble.
Because
it's very rare you have people wearing lots of the same colour.
Right.
When it's not black.
So
I'm sad Pete wasn't in it, but I mean, he had a good day the day before, so it's fine.
Yeah,
you know, and you can't do everything.
And that was it. That's the tough thing with the Rumble, because part of the thing that's going to disappoint is the people you wanted to see and you don't see.
Yeah,
you can't have everyone in it, I guess. And
what was everyone's favourite elimination during the Rumble?
I like the one you mentioned of Sheamus. I thought that, particularly as Heath had that four or five people in a row just come down and kick him, and then throws him in and throws him out. What else?
I thought
Rollins getting rid of Cesaro was pretty good.
Yeah.
Xavier Woods one, which where he went over the corner, was pretty
when they got Kofi back and in, threw again, back it's in. Always good. But he went so high, I was like, how did that just happen?
Xavier Woods tweeted about that, saying that when he was at college, he played football for a bit and then he quit and became a cheerleader.
Brilliant, yeah.
And that's where they got that from, is from bringing him up in the air. I love the fact that he sacrificed himself and put his friend could put his foot on him.
Yeah.
And then the whole plate of pancakes was so stupid but so funny.
I loved all of that. It's good because it teased that we're not going to get a crazy Xavier Woods moment, we're going to get a funny one now, that he's stepping on his mates and pancakes. And then they did that as like, oh no, we're getting the crazy athleticism part as well. And that was,
I'd like to throw this out there. You know that they need a commissioner for 205 Live, which they've all the wrestlers have been tweeting about, going, it should be this person, it should be this person. Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, I've seen
make Rey Mysterio the 205 Live commissioner. Arguably the greatest wrestler of that weight class of a generation. No, I'm not even going to say arguably. Definitely the greatest wrestler of that weight class of a generation.
It'd definitely bring interest to it, wouldn't it? I'm not sure you necessarily want the commissioner of a wrestling show to be the biggest star on it.
I think, but 205's like, obviously what they tried to do with Enzo before they rightfully canned him was they put him on there because he wasn't necessarily the best wrestler, but he was a big personality, and the show was then built around him for that reason. I think there's nothing wrong because of the odd way in that it's filmed after SmackDown. So if you go to a SmackDown, TV taping, well, it's now live, isn't it? But so you normally have a dark match, then you have SmackDown for 2 hours, then you have nearly an hour-ish of 205 Live, and then you have a dark main event to ensure that the crowds, if you took kids, and kids don't necessarily know Grand Metalik,
I
get that, it's fine. Like, I love 205, but I get that people don't necessarily know. Sure. But I mean, normally you get a dark main event of someone who's perhaps not wrestled on the main show and is a big star, so someone like Randy Orton or whatever. And everyone sticks around, and those matches are normally pretty good fun. But I think having star power on it is a good thing.
I'm not disputing that.
Yeah, I totally get it. It makes it a weird dynamic. But
if Ray can go, why isn't not just put him on the show?
Yeah, Ray is the cruiserweight champion. Now it's vacant.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Was the only reason I thought against that was what good shape Ray was in. Because if Ray's got in that good shape, why would he then just go and be a commissioner? Do you know what I mean? If he's good to go, then let Ray go.
Also, I think if you are on the 205, and this is from speaking to Jack, their schedule's not as nuts because they've only just started doing live shows.
Correct.
They do Raw and SmackDown.
Yes.
And the pay-per-view.
But they don't do... There's usually only two or three of them on a house show tour.
Yeah. So maybe...
Sorry, live event tour.
Maybe that could be a thing. Because I know that whilst Ray looks in amazing shape, he is injury-prone. I mean, he's not full on. He's not the Darren Anderton of professional wrestling. I called someone that yesterday.
You did.
It might have been Lycos.
Yeah.
I think
it was Lycos.
Yeah. I think him with a limited schedule and being looked, because people forget you wrestle on the indies. You often have to, like we were talking about before with injuries, you often have to pretty much kill yourself to get noticed.
Yeah.
You can wrestle a more restrictive style in WWE and still get away with it. A great example of this I would use is from a house show I went to last year, and watching Randy Orton wrestle a 20-minute match where I think he took about one bump, and kids there went nuts for him. And grown-ups, like, everything he did was brilliant and was sports entertainment, but it was brilliant. And, you know, he ain't limping. You know what I mean? So you've got to think about it like that.
He does hear voices in his head, though.
He does. I mean, that is a problem. Anything else from the Rumble match itself?
Just that as everyone was in jubilation of Nakamura getting the win, that, again, it's rare. We've not had a crowd favourite win in a while, or a Rumble win that everyone's happy with in a while.
Yeah, fair.
It's been a while, isn't it? So that was kind of nice. But as everyone was excited, I was excitedly preparing a tweet saying that my sources have said that
that Kane is going to win. So at Mania, Nakamura and Kane can fight over who gets to have the nice red leather championship belt to match their outfits. So it would look nice on either of them. It suits them.
When Renee was in the ring, I was like, this isn't usual. I don't normally interview the winner of the Rumble, but I suppose he's got to choose. And then, but then my brain went, oh, he's going to choose AJ. Oh, my God. This is going to be the best. If you've never seen the match between AJ Styles and Nakamura from Wrestle Kingdom 2 years ago, one of the 2 or 3 years ago, whatever it was, it's the fist bump one. A wonderful, wonderful match. And the match that sold me on AJ Styles, who I wasn't that fussed about before, that's the match that sold me on him.
Yeah. Is there a SmackDown pay-per-view between now and WrestleMania?
Fastlane.
So, obviously, AJ will not be defending on that?
Presumably not.
Okay.
But Nakamura and AJ Styles is going to be tremendous.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure it will. I did wonder maybe if it's slightly given, or whether they'd sacrificed that element of the next 2 months so they can announce that match essentially.
Is Elimination Chamber Raw or SmackDown? I can't remember. Raw. That's Raw. So yeah, so it's Fastlane. But yeah, I think it's fine. And they'll get away with it. Next up, we had the tag match that, bless them, they were never going to do great crowd-wise out of this, because people forget, even if this was the best match in the world, people have just been sat in one place for an hour and 15 minutes watching a Rumble match.
Yeah.
And
they need to go to the loo.
Yes.
Genuinely, what I liked about the Rumble was this match was, it was perfectly good. They told a good little story. I enjoyed the element of Jordan never getting involved, but it was to give people a recovery from a Rumble. You've only ever seen a Rumble and then either got a championship match next, like the main belt, or you're going home.
Yeah.
You generally end on the Rumble. And yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. And so Sheamus and Cesaro regained the Raw Tag Team titles, beating Jason Jordan and he said Henry Rollins then. That'd be a fucking great match.
Bring him in. Storyline dad.
Virtually a handicap match.
Yeah. With someone who's just gone half an hour in the Rumble as well.
Yeah. The crowd was pretty dead for it, which is a tough spot for everybody. No one can really blame anyone for it. But I think the thing we really need to talk about in this match is Seth Rollins' tights.
Yeah.
He looked like a creator wrestler.
Yeah.
Like it's the sort of tights I would have given myself when I was 18 playing video games.
It looked like a wallet I had when I was 16.
Tremendous.
There was many memes about what he looked like. You know, maybe he was channeling the spirit of the late great Bam Bam Bigelow, who wore similar stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a very, I don't know, his music now shouts "Burn It Down."
Which is brilliant. I love it every time that starts.
Also, it stops that big pause that used to really freak me out. Like,
you hated that pause.
As someone who presses buttons for music at wrestling shows,
every
time it sounds like something's gone wrong.
Yeah. The only, outside of Pastor's injury yesterday, the only time I gave John a look of concern was during whatever file you're using for Zack Sabre Jr.'s music, where it goes slightly quieter.
So, I was going to tell you, but I'll tell you on the podcast now.
Okay. We've got no secrets, mate.
So this was one, I actually bought the track off of iTunes, and that is how the song is.
Oh, is it?
Just the bass guitar starts really loud, and then in the mix it goes down.
Oh.
It's quite strange, isn't it?
Who's the song by? Because it's very good.
It's called Mother by the band called Idles, as in I-D-L-E-S.
Right.
It's really good.
It is. Possibly not if you vote by a blue persuasion in this country. Definitely.
True. But that's the deal with that track. It's just the bass for the first half a second is too loud.
Yeah. Bizarre.
And it gets changed in the mix, and everyone's gone, no, we can't be bothered to change it.
Fine. Pretty much how I'll put this podcast together. although we think we've got the sound levels right for this one this time. Someone's going to tell me it's quiet.
And I haven't coughed all the way through it.
Yeah, which is a bonus.
I am eating my lunch into the microphone there. So.
Yeah. Rollins' tights. They were what they were.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a withering.
I love Seth Rollins. I love the fact he's been allowed to do the curb stomp again in what seems like a safer fashion than he used to do it.
Yeah.
Not that he did it dangerously. It's just a dangerous move to do.
Yeah.
You pointed to something before. On your I'm going, no. Finish your
Why
mouth.
Why would you do this?
Because you're unprofessional enough to eat a fucking cereal bar during a
I've
podcast.
I've had 3 hours sleep.
Me too.
Did you get up at 7:30 to unload a van?
No, I didn't do that.
Shut up then.
Yeah. I was out. I was out stealing cars, as discussed by my GCSE car crime exam earlier.
Because 7:30 is the best time to steal cars.
It is.
Because not only can you get the car, it also really annoys commuters.
Yeah. Just if you listen to this now, and I'll let John finish his mouthful. Just if you listen to this now, and you live in I used to live in the countryside. I still do live in the countryside, but now in North Wales, but I don't have a job anymore. Because this is barely a job, let's be honest. But when I used to live in the countryside in Leicestershire, and I used to have to drive to work, so I used to work at Next head office. Mm-hmm. And every morning I have to drive down the A47 through the countryside to get to work. Can anyone explain to me why farmers who own tractors choose rush hour to be the point where they decide to fucking move a tractor 40 metres on a main road? Can you explain that to me? Because if you are a farmer listening to this on... If you're a farmer listening to this on a tractor, tweet
me. I know
me.
The reason.
Do you know the reason?
Yeah.
What?
It's a legitimate reason.
What is it?
Bants.
Fucking legend.
Legend.
The thing that I pointed out on my piece of paper is that I was watching the Rumble with Progress commentator and podcast host Callum Leslie, who looks things up on the internet whilst watching
and
wrestling.
He has one testicle now after Pete Dunne kicked the other one.
Correct, yes, and a bruised rib from falling on it after being kicked in his testicle by Pete Dunne. Jason Jordan is hurt.
So he's legit.
He's legit hurt.
So that was... Because, I mean, the fact that he just sat on the ring steps and stuff like that, I think is... I did suspect
he was only in, he only tagged in for like what 2 seconds, 3 seconds,
and then he didn't engage at all. And that's
how is he? He's not actually because obviously they used the concussion angle in that.
No, he's not.
He's not concussed because I don't think they'd let him walk out.
Some other injury.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I thought that was. But I liked that as a bit of storytelling. Again, I think that's. It's looking at it as my thing of I enjoyed the Rumble more than Takeover. It's because I needed. A pretty non-eventful match here because we've just, do you know what I mean? In the actual scheme of it all, you couldn't have had anything great here. It worked, yes.
It's like a
sorbet
like
match,
yeah.
Yes.
Because I've written down here, I've just scribbled notes as I'm watching. Why was it on the show if Jason Jordan is legit hurt and the other three in the Rumble match? Firstly, is my point from earlier that I think that match was probably meant to go into pre-show, and when they had to move it, and also when you do move it, do you go, well, it's not going to be that interesting because we've seen three of them already, and Jordan's hurt, and then you go, oh, actually no, people are going to need 20 minutes to go and have a wee, go and get a beer, go and buy some merch.
You need a buffer
and
it's not Michael or
you
Bruce.
feel a little bit sorry for the guys in the match, but they would have known exactly what the score is before going out for that match, and would have, and they were doing their best to get reactions, but they would have known not to kill themselves for it.
Yeah. I think it was in the Royal Rumble match, it just reminded me now. Cesaro did a diving European uppercut that looked like it killed someone.
Yep. Yeah. Low angle diving European.
I
unfortunately,
love
it,
so
it was
much.
The hard cam was showing it, so you couldn't actually see who it was who took it.
Every now and again, like I mean, I'm not famous as fuck like you, but I'm getting there. And every now and again, someone famous will follow me on Twitter, and I'll probably pop for it, which really makes me happy.
Yeah.
Cesaro doesn't follow me on Twitter because he only follows about 100 people, but I have met him and I have had conversations with him, and he's a really lovely guy who loves all forms of sport. But I tweeted the other week that my son's kayfabe name of Claudio, and obviously he's partly named after Claudio Ranieri, but he's also named after Cesaro's indie name, Claudio Castagnoli, which I think is a great name, and he's one of my favourite wrestlers. And I mentioned that he was named after him. He favourited it, and I properly popped for it. I very rare I've popped for getting a tweet favourited anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, I love Cesaro, great.
Do you check who favourites your tweets?
No, because he's
you get a notification if you follow them.
Yeah, because if you're verified.
Oh, it's a verified thing.
Yeah,
okay.
You get a notification if someone else verified favourites or retweets.
See, I'm not verified because I'm not famous as fuck.
Yeah,
I'm not famous as fuck. I may be famous as shit. What's the less famous as piss? No, I'm not. Shit's quite a big swear word. Yeah. I mean, I did rank my swear words the other day on Twitter. I'm maybe famous as piss. Yeah, I'm not famous as fuck like Pip.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just sit where I want at a UFC show. You know what I mean? But I'm, you know, I've got a blue tick. That's about it. Famous as tick. It's not a swear word. Next up, we had the three-way.
Don't know what that was.
this is just a weird. This is a weird, odd illustration of the levels of fame now. But I was at a Bellator event. Yeah. I've not done a Choose Night Draw since, and I was sitting in the famous as fuck seat. So yeah, I'm right. I'm up the front. I'm enjoying it.
Was there Andy Shepherd, who is the ring announcer for WWE UK? Does he Bellator?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he's a lovely lad. He's a really nice guy.
And I'm enjoying it. And then I got a text because a mate of mine was there, a Mr. Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
And he said, do you want to come and sit with us? And I said, all right. And they literally, me and my three mates who were in the famous as fuck section, they pulled up chairs to put next to the octagon, just unfolded chairs to sit there. So that's real famous as fuck.
Yeah, that's proper famous.
We're not even in the VIP section. They've just gone, oh, we'll get some chairs and put them practically in the cage for you. So you just sit and go, all right, this is good.
Well, when we did, so about a year ago, we were shown on telly, me and you, John. At the WWE UK championship thing, which I still think Glenn's angry about because he wasn't there. he's definitely angry about it.
Well, I just whooped like an idiot, so I'm angry for that reason. I wish people would stop bringing it up.
Yeah. So they said to us, they went, we'd like to show you on camera, and we were like, okay, that'd be cool.
Sweet.
Where do we go? And they went, oh, we'll just, like, you don't watch the whole show. We'll just send you out. We'll just put you out there. And they just put chairs down. They did the same thing. They just put chairs down. And then they went, the camera's going to look at you, just clap and wave and smile.
Yeah.
Which I hate. I hate being photographed for the reason I'm going to keep a facial expression at one point. Yeah. Whereas he went full American on it. Just proper, woo! Woo!
Listener, my face now is the equivalent of the straight-mouthed, dead-eyed emoji.
You regret that, don't you?
I really do.
Yeah, it's like...
It's why, since then, I barely interact with anyone.
It's still, every now and again...
It's why, since and prior to then, I barely interact.
That was all of his energy. He'd been reserving battery power for that one moment.
Yeah.
10% left. Emergency mode.
Because Rufus Hound said that to me yesterday. He went. I thought it was weird when I saw you and John on telly last year, and I was like, "Yeah, it was. That was an odd day."
I love it.
And Q people. Even now, I still get people going, "Oh, I can't believe you're on a suit. Can't believe you're 40 years old this year."
Funny though that no one questions that I do.
I think people know that you're wearing a suit now. You're wearing a cummerbund. I just wanted to say the word cummerbund.
But people would only ever see me in combat trousers and a hoodie.
Well, and also as well, at any point where we have been required to wear a suit, you absolutely hate wearing a suit, whereas I really love wearing a suit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love wearing a suit.
Me and Glenn fucking love wearing suits. Yeah.
I don't like wearing them. I refuse to wear a tie.
Yeah, so I think you wore a tie. Were you wearing a tie?
Nope.
You weren't? No.
I absolutely refused.
Whereas I own five suits now. Because of the secret millions I've been paid. Yeah. And I
Uncle Paul bought it for you.
Yeah. I just like wearing a suit. Like, I'd wear them on stage, but I feel it would change my persona somewhat, so I can't really do it yet. Anyway.
Yet. Persona change planned imminently.
Well, so I've.
No.
I've started being like. I still love doing stand-up. Don't get me wrong, I do still love doing stand-up, but wrestling has become my main passion over the last. Certainly over the last, we've been doing progress for 6 years, but certainly over the last 3 years, it's become much more.
Listener, this is what happened to me 6 years ago when I got out of comedy.
Yeah, when John stopped being my agent. I only now, comedy has afforded me the luxury of only being able to do gigs that I want to do rather than gigs I have to do. A little bit less at the minute because I've just paid my tax bill, so now I'm having to do gigs that I don't necessarily want to do all the time.
How do people book you, Jim?
Sally@redcomedy.co.uk. So I will still work.
She's not as good as I was.
You're such a monster. I'll still gig, but I've got this thing now. We went to Los Angeles in 2010 where I'd always been a really polite bloke and became a dickhead to audiences because I wasn't enjoying myself.
And now I've just started just trying to push the boundaries of not being polite on stage, which is a really rewarding thing. So now if I did a joke the other day where people clapped and I made them clap me again. Like, I was like, that's fucking brilliant. I am brilliant at this. Clap me again. So what's basically happened is I've become more of a dickhead. So that's my new persona in comedy, is dickhead Jim. ignoring my own advice of not being a dick. Anyway, three-way for the universal title. Weird, tangent, I needed one. Brock Lesnar beats Kane, who was always taking the pin. and Braun. I mean, imagine if Braun had taken the pin off Kane. Imagine.
Yeah.
Going into WrestleMania. Imagine if that happened. And again, I'm not knocking Kane. Like, Kane has been a constant of me watching wrestling for the last 20-odd years of my life. He's a smashing bloke who works really hard, and for a man of his age to still be doing the stuff that he's doing, fucking fair play.
Sure,
to him.
he's in this match though, in this program, to pass the torch.
Yeah,
that's his role.
Absolutely, and believably get Strowman across as a monster. Mm. Now, I would say, based on how fucking over Strowman is, again, mainly for pushing things over, that, like, just a man coming out and saying his own name, and people go, "Yep, love him,
like it."
What I don't get is, you know how the crowds turned on Roman Reigns and went, "Oh, he's being pushed, isn't he? Just been pushed. I don't like him now." Well, so is Braun.
Yeah.
Braun had had like 10 matches before he was on television.
And again, to clarify, not saying that in a negative
way. No, he's great.
It's completely worked. I adore it. Yeah. That's all it took.
But it's the same push.
It was bizarre that when he was in the Wyatt family and then when he went singles career first, I was like, it's just a big bloke. I'm not into it. And then in a 2-week spell, completely over. I've had the same recently with Heavy Machinery. I didn't get them at all, and then promo and their feud with Sabatelli and Moss in one of my favourite tag matches on NXT, just completely over with me. But again, it's finding that small thing that clicks and goes, there you go.
That Sabatelli and Moss thing, which is based around them I think selling Sabatelli's Maserati, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh no, it was the Street Profits one. There was a Street Profits one.
This one was the shorter one of Heavy Machinery. I was just going to move it.
Yeah,
Otis was just going to pick their car up and move it, and they came out and caught him, and that's how the feud started. But yeah, anyway,
perfectly acceptable. The opening couple of minutes of this match feature a lot of stuff you'll see again in slow motion. That would be Braun Strowman kneeing. If you're going to hit someone hard, you're probably going to get a receipt. That's how wrestling works. If you accidentally stiff someone, they're going to hit you back. Normally, everyone apologises, everyone gets on with the match. Because if you hit someone hard, you probably should get it back. That's fine.
Yeah.
If you're going to choose someone to do that to, maybe don't choose one of the most dangerous human beings on the planet.
Yeah.
You will shorten your life expectancy. And so Braun, and it could well be, it might be that they stiffed each other. It might well be that Braun and Lesnar get on so well that they've actually just gone a bit like Walter and Timothy yesterday. They've just gone, stick me hard, I'm not bothered. Like, but Strowman knees Lesnar in the face. Yeah. He's horrible. And then you just, a couple of minutes later, Lesnar just punches him in the face.
The punch is the worst one, because the knee, at least there feels like there's some movement in it.
Or
at
least he sees it slightly
coming. The punch is just...
And it's really short as well.
And then just... Boom.
All the power. Just...
And the rest of the match was stiff as well. Like Lesnar F5s Kane on the announce table with the monitors still in it, which is fucking horrible.
Yeah. And again, both of the table of the commentator table bits there took kind of a hit and then they broke, and for me that's a good thing. It's like a progress. The hits that make me wince the most often are the ones that don't make a big sound.
Yeah,
because like, oh, that was a dull thud rather than a big slap.
The Walter ones yesterday weren't the chops. It was when he was properly clubbing,
hammering on the chest. Jeez,
and the chops at the head.
Yeah.
It's so good.
On things like that on the table, again, it looks at first as if something's gone wrong. It's like, no, that's just made it show that this isn't just a paper table.
Yeah.
This is something they're going through and it's hitting hard and it's taking a bit to break.
I think a match like this with all the table spots and all the plunder and stuff like that is perfect for something like Philadelphia as well, where obviously they're raised on ECW and everything. And I suppose the question now is, because they've kept Strowman didn't take the pin, Do you think they're going to go with?
And he was screaming at Lesnar.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to go with?
Beat me. You can't beat me.
Do you think we're going to go in Strowman and Lesnar Mania?
It's a long time to keep it bubbling, isn't it?
I've got a feeling that they are myself. And again, it's weird.
Okay, Lesnar's not on every show.
Yeah.
So.
Before they moved, or before we knew the order of events, my early prediction before the show kicked off to Jim was Brock pins Kane and Braun goes into the Rumble and wins, and as is I'm not finished with you yet moment makes it his catchphrase, and then you've got Brock and Braun. But that didn't happen, but it kind of did with the fact that he didn't lose, and then it was him standing there going, you can't beat me. They clearly,
one imagines if that's the route they're going down, Braun goes into the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah,
Elimination Chamber wins that. And then
I can see that.
That's the Mania match then.
Which is, I mean, it's believable, isn't
it? Yeah,
also,
makes sense.
In that match he's going to tip the entire Elimination Chamber over.
You reckon?
Yeah. Just going to lift it up, just tip it over.
With tip the arena over. It'll be the first. It'll be the first WWE event where the seats have seat belts, because Braun is going to tip the arena over.
I'd love him to just do a promo going, look, previously I've only been up for attempted murder.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually commit one murder a show.
Yeah. Really drill this.
Should have murdered a wrestling fan. And there'd be wrestling fans going, I'll do it.
Yeah. Can I get a picture?
So, and that was fun. I enjoyed it. I don't think anyone needs to take the title off Lesnar until the time's right. Strowman's probably the next biggest star that they can put it on.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's good they've not rushed into it.
Like, right.
He's at the top of the card and he's getting a big old push, but he was in that great main event at SummerSlam, which was great fun that we saw. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that they're not just going, hey, he's a big lad, have a title.
Yeah.
You know, by the time he does actually get round to, he's going to win the title at some point, isn't he? By the time he gets round to winning the title, it's going to be a big fucking deal.
Yeah. And they're making him chase it. Yeah. And a monster chasing something is terrifying.
Chasing another monster for it.
It's great.
It's just
it's
Godzilla versus Mothra. And then we had our main events.
Yes.
Our main events was the Women's Rumble. Many surprises in the Women's Rumble. Loads of them great. And also as well, you mentioned the thing about Stephanie trying to get across the history. But because they had so many people from they didn't have people from it was Divas, there were people who were great wrestlers or did great things to advance women's wrestling. So whilst people might go, Kelly was a great wrestler, but she still had a part to play in women's wrestling over the last couple of decades. And Tori Wilson and people like that, exactly the same. I think it was really cool that people like Molly Holly were in it. And the little moment between Trish Stratus and
Mickey James, and Mickey
that
was great.
Oh, was fantastic. And it was that thing of, in terms of match quality, the opening half of this Rumble was not at the level of the men's Rumble, which was solid all the way through in terms of actual wrestling quality. What was interesting, and Paul Robinson pointed this out, was how smart all the women in this match were working, because loads of them went under the bottom rope, had a rest, and it allowed the action to be framed better as well. Because one would presume that if you're on the men's roster, there's loads of people who will have done multiple Rumbles. Women's Battle Royals are just rare anyway. Like, a Battle Royals is a staple thing in men's wrestling. I don't think I've seen many Women's Battle Royals in my time. So...
Only you can answer that.
I haven't. That was a rhetorical question. But, yeah, so I think... I think they framed it better by having people, you nearly only always seem to have at the most six people in the ring at any one time, which I think made it an easier watch. But it also meant people were being smart. So someone like Sasha Banks, who was in there for ages, meant, you know, she could slide out, have a breather, come back in, get a few more spots in, which I enjoyed. I think Sasha looked great. I think Nia Jax looked fantastic in it as an absolute monster. And I also think the final elimination of Asuka on Nikki Bella was really cool.
Yes.
They did it on the apron when there was genuine jeopardy. I was watching it going, maybe Nikki is going to win this. And that also felt to me, because the Bellas, while still big stars, it does feel like they're the last generation now, and the new generation are Charlotte, Alexa, Asuka, etc.
Sure.
But the little bump that Asuka takes on the apron and then just kicks Nikki's leg out and she goes down. Big pop. Everyone was delighted. I think it's weird because if you looked at the people who were going into this outside of a massive surprise, which we'll come to in a minute, you'd thought Asuka was winning. Like, I thought Asuka was winning.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was probably Asuka, possibly Nia Jax.
I adored this match. I can't say enough about it. I thought, I didn't even feel there was any slowness or lack of quality in the start. I thought all of the storytelling was amazing. I love that they got to make Sasha the MVP by staying in for ages and having really, and but Asuka win, who should be winning it. And I thought,
and very much like Finn Balor, it's a boost. Not to interrupt, but it's a boost for Sasha, who completely. People have kind of gone, yeah, we thought she was great when she moved up, and now we're a little bit, and now it just lifts her up again. The same thing it did with Finn,
completely. Yeah, and just I thought all the surprise entrants put years and years of surprise entrants in the Male Rumble to shame as men are coming out in t-shirts to cover up their out of shape bodies and not be able to take a bump or do a move. All of the women came out looking as in shape as they ever did. Every move they pulled off was like again, there's normally someone of the older, the surprise ones, who will not quite get a move right. Everyone nailed their moves. All the execution of everything was amazing. It made it feel, obviously it was already iconic and historic, but it made it feel even more so because you got to see Trish square up with Sasha Banks. And you got to see things like that, and it's like, wow, I didn't know I wanted to see all these matchups. And
even the little bits of comedy that were done, like Vicky Guerrero coming out, was really cool. Like
the thing is, like, when a match is an hour long, you need a break.
Well, that was one of the things I wondered as well, was did it feel, because again, I love the Rumble match, it's my favourite, as we said, but there's always a point in the Rumble that they're filling a bit of time.
Right.
They're waiting to fill them. These were 90 seconds rather than 2 minutes. Yeah. So I wonder if that helped it feel like there wasn't any of that.
Yeah.
But Naomi's securing herself as the Kofi Kingston of the
Rumbles
was absolutely amazing, was wonderful, and nailed it brilliantly. And
then getting back in and getting thrown straight out again.
Just like Kofi did.
Just like Kofi did. I was like, it's perfect. I loved everything about it. I even had a little chuckle at them trying to make any excitement or drama over Carmella entering to fight for the opportunity to fight for the belt. Carrying the money in the bank down with her anyway.
Do you know something? Like, that didn't even occur to me.
She's got that in her hand.
Yeah.
And then, like, is she going to get the chance?
This is something that we always think about logic-wise. If someone's got a title shot for us, if we've got, like, Super Strong Star, for example, where...
If someone already has a title shot, they don't need to go in the tournament.
Precisely. You know.
But, yeah, that was the one bit I hadn't
even thought of that. Although, I guess, if she won a title shot, got pinned, cashed in immediately, and then won it, maybe.
But, yeah.
Although I lost again, that would be even better.
Or she won the Rumble, then cashed in and had to fight herself in the main event of WrestleMania. Just could have WrestleMania off, essentially. Was her prize would be she could have potentially have WrestleMania off. Because she's champion and number one contender.
And gets two show bonuses.
Love the idea of someone having WrestleMania off and their only WrestleMania appearance being via FaceTime.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Hiya. I'm having a good time. I'm in here in New Orleans, it's lovely, but I'm in the Bahamas.
So really sorry, Andy Murray doing sports personality.
Yeah.
Really sorry, I can't be there because I'm in the Bahamas like I am every year. Thanks for the award.
Yeah. So Asuka wins. The two respective women's champions get in the ring with Asuka,
which was a great moment.
Which is a great moment. Luckily, they didn't do what they did on the Raw 25 show, which is Charlotte wearing heels whilst Alexa Bliss wasn't and appeared to be 17 feet taller than her.
Yeah.
This time round, I believe Charlotte's wearing flats and Asuka's wearing Alexa Bliss is wearing heels to make it slightly a slightly better dynamic in terms of height. They're both great champions. Asuka stands between them, and then Ronda Rousey comes out and I squealed in my little hotel room,
and the arena goes nuts.
I was because I messaged you and went, it's on last, something big's going to happen, and I might change my pick to win to Rousey instead of...
I had Rousey as my pick, and I wasn't saying it to people because I like surprises, but I'd seen that the photographer that she normally uses was at the Rumble,
yeah,
so it's like, well, That's just small things like that. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
It's clearly all the rumours and then things like that. But
now, so Rousey's nickname all through her MMA career, and apparently going to various reports today, she's a full-time WWE employee. She's signed a multi-year full-time contract. Mm-hmm. Full-time is interesting because Brock Lesnar is not on a full-time contract, which means I think she's probably done with MMA now anyway.
Completely. But, and she has legitimately always been a wrestling fan.
She was wearing Roddy Piper's leather jacket when she came out.
His actual leather jacket.
Leather jacket. Which,
flown in by his family for specifically to give to her for that. And again, she cites Roddy Piper as being responsible for her having an MMA career because she was a fan of him, and he motivated her to get into combat sports. So
Matt Riddle, everyone knows Matt Riddle's got a UFC background, right? Matt Riddle was a backyard wrestler before he was doing MMA. Yeah, he was doing martial arts when he was a kid, but he was also doing backyard wrestling. Yeah. He has always wanted to be a wrestler, and it's the reason that people like anyone who's got and there's more and more people from MMA moving into wrestling because there's Tom Lawler as well, isn't there now?
Yeah.
And obviously Shayna Baszler.
And Tom Lawler at the weigh-ins used to always come dressed as a different wrestler. So there's great pictures of him at weigh-ins. There's Hulk Hogan. There's also everyone else is all professional. He'd always come as a different wrestler.
So there's, whilst you have people like Lesnar and CM Punk and a load of the Japanese guys moving towards MMA, you've now got people going, do you know what, MMA really hurts. You can't do it forever. And once you've lost three or four times on the spin, your career's on the downspin, isn't it? Yeah. We cannot overstate how big a star she is. Like, this is a massive, massive sign-in. When women's wrestling is already very, very positive, having this one extra person to really, really kick it into the next level is a huge thing.
It's knowing that, like, she's the Hulk Hogan of women's. Like, she's responsible for it being where it is today. Before Ronda, Dana White had said, we will categorically never have women fighting in the UFC. Mm-hmm. It's not something I'm interested in. Not a fan. It's got no future. Then Ronda happened, and she opened the doors to the women's division. She headlined some of the biggest pay-per-views ever. She legitimised a lot of MMA because people had previously seen it as blokes beating the crap out of each other. Well, she's an Olympic medalist. So it was suddenly, they're athletes. It's a sport. She's huge.
But also as well, I think the thing that when me and my wife used to watch it when she was in UFC and she was on that great run of victories was the fact that she'd beat someone up and then like coming down to the ring, fighter. And then as soon as the match had finished, she was just like, oh, I'm about to be in. I'm just a normal woman again now.
To be honest, it depends on the opponent.
Yeah.
She did have a few, because that's what I love about MMA in general, but Ronda was one that with a few people, she wouldn't shake the round after. But that's the only thing that disappointed me was, one of the things that made Ronda one of my favourites was her walkout was fury. Her angry face, because I think she's a beautiful young lady. You never see someone more scary when she's walking out from a UFC fight. And that's why her coming out with a smile on her face and being kind of, hey guys, I was like, oh, you should have come out hair tied back, looking like you can kill everyone in that ring.
And I know
she doesn't need to because she's not in the match though.
Yeah. I guess so. But I thought just for her first introduction, I would have liked her to be terrifying Ronda. But again, I guess that's right. That means you're holding off on that. You're holding off on that reveal.
From a business and a marketing perspective, if she's going to be one of, if not the face of the women's division, you don't want your first impression of her to be angry, furious Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
The rumours on the internet this morning is that the plan for her at WrestleMania is for her not to wrestle Asuka, which seems suggested because she shook Asuka's hand. Right, because Asuka didn't choose who she wanted to fight.
I'm sorry, Asuka didn't. She didn't shake her hand there.
But she went to shake her hand. So
I enjoyed the vagueness of that. I enjoyed the vagueness of that because I thought, does that mean they're going to team up and fight Charlotte and Bliss?
Well, I know that it felt clunky with her pointing to the WrestleMania sign and stuff like that, but again, it's not an environment she's used to yet, and she
I didn't feel it. I saw a tweet saying it felt clunky, and I was like, fucking cool, it's Ronda Rousey in a WWE ring.
That's the thing that,
at the WrestleMania
that's
sign.
The thing that got it for me. Outside of the technicality of which camera she's meant to be looking at and stuff like that, I don't give a shit. It's Ronda fucking Rousey, right?
Love it.
The The rumours going around this morning are that her match at WrestleMania will not be against any of those three women in the ring. It'll be her and a partner against Stephanie and Triple H, which has been teased.
That's what they teased originally, yeah.
So, would make sense. And because Stephanie is trained but not to the level of a lot of the other women's wrestlers, it would mean it's a bit of protection for Ronda as well.
So who do you think will partner?
I don't know.
Going back a couple of manias, The Rock would make sense.
Yeah. That's the rumour I'd seen, was that they're
not
finally
even seen
doing
that rumour, but son.
Well, that was the original thing, wasn't it? Was The Rock getting her out and Triple H being there? And
no.
Well, because I don't think Nakamura Styles would be the main event.
No.
I think Lesnar, whoever, would be the main event. It's hard because there's a lot of spinning plates. You know, we're not this from trying to book shows. Mm. Like, there's a lot of spinning plates in, you know, what the main event might actually be. But
I think there's so many options, and that's why I liked them keeping it vague in this moment. Because if Ronda can get up to speed, Charlotte and Ronda could be the first women's match to headline to main event WrestleMania comfortably.
I think
if that's her big introduction as well. Where there's not kind of loads of up and down.
I think it's if she picks it up as quick as someone like, people forget Riddle's still only been wrestling 2 and a bit years.
Yeah.
Like, if you've already got the discipline of a martial arts background and the discipline of an MMA career, and you can pick wrestling up quick, then sky's the limit.
And again, for anyone, I saw a few people angry, oh, it's disrespectful that she's getting this position. Number one, I thought it was beautiful that she wasn't in the Rumble, because it meant that the women who deserve that historic moment got that historic moment, because she's not a wrestler yet. It would have been harsh for her to come in and go, I get this. Well, look at what Asuka's been doing for years now, and look at what Sasha and all of these have been doing.
Yeah.
So I loved that. I loved that she wasn't actually in it but still had that moment. And you can't doubt her fandom. She was known as Rowdy Ronda Rousey because of Rowdy Roddy Piper. She started the Four Horsewomen because of Flair. She was doing this before there was any talk of being involved in wrestling, because she loves wrestling. That's it. So there's no disrespect there at all. And I thought that was all perfect. I loved that. A lot of people again were angry, like, oh, we didn't get her in the match or whatever else. Like, no, that's a good thing, because it would have been, as much as I would have loved it as an MMA fan, I would have also felt it a bit unfair on Asuka, on Banks, on whoever else who's got the women's division to where it is, to then go this historic moment and the first winner is Rousey because headlines.
Yeah.
So if that rumour is true, that explains why Stephanie McMahon was on commentary. Mm-hmm. That was the sole purpose of her being there, was for the handshake between the two of them. And because of the thing from 2 or 3 manias ago where she and Ronda had the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It also explains why you had the three women in the ring at the end of the Rumble, Asuka and Charlotte and Alexa.
Yeah.
Because to do it any other way would have given a very strong indication that it would have been Ronda against one of those two champions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing you're trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. Equally, you don't have Ronda coming out and just walking out behind Asuka as she's celebrating on the stage, maybe.
Yeah.
Because then you're suggesting it's Rousey and Asuka. Yeah.
You've got to give yourself options, because, you don't know.
It's a long way away.
You know.
Yeah, it's really 3 months. No, it's 70 days. So
it's good to have an idea. But at the same time, you never know how quick she's going to catch on, or if other people are going to get hurt.
She might get hurt.
Yeah, you've got to keep everything just spinning.
And again, and it's good to have the headlines. So to have that moment when you have got an event that had two good rumbles.
Yep. And also,
some good title matches. You know,
we're finding this as promoters at the moment. We're 70 days away from, we're 70 days away from WrestleMania, but we're doing our biggest show ever this year.
Yeah.
And, we're thinking of ways, how early can we announce things?
Because we've got more tickets. Because normally we don't have to, because we sell shows out.
And also, we've got tickets to sell, and we want people to be, excited for it more than 2 weeks ahead of the show.
And also, it's the marketing point of view that's difficult for us is, I think we can safely say that we're not going to be doing what other people might do and go, here are 10 Americans.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
No.
Like, I'll tell you right now, if you're expecting 10 Americans, you ain't getting 10 Americans.
We're doing us.
We've got to Wembley because of the people who've worked hard for us every show for the last 6 years. So they're the people who need to be rewarded for it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard, isn't it? But it's kind of the fun of what we do. Although I don't really want to think about wrestling now for another 2 or 3 days.
It's been an intense
can I have
2 or 3 days of wrestling.
I can have the rest of the today off.
Can I have the rest of today off while I'm driving?
No, I'm saying I'm having the rest of the today off before I start the edit of Sunday's show.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait for Raw tonight.
The
amount of fallout, the amount of stuff that's gone on, it's exciting.
The thing is,
wrestling.
I'll watch Raw tomorrow with my little boy, who has now started diving off things, copying wrestlers, which is great. Don't try this at home. Yeah. He also doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't understand the warning.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to tell him, but apparently 17 months old don't listen. But yeah, I'll watch it tomorrow because I'll say it now. But and also, my entire 4-hour drive home, I will do nothing but think about wrestling.
Yeah,
because that's what we do.
Do you think we get a Sasha Banks and Bayley feud? That's the one thing I wanted to mention about the Women's Rumble that I haven't so far.
That she eliminated. Yeah, she eliminated that.
And it came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
but also people are starting to boo Bayley as well, though.
Right,
which has been happening for the last 6 months. So I don't know. I don't know how you do that because Sasha's. Sasha wasn't positioned a heel in that match, but she still acted like a dick to people.
Yeah.
Whereas Bayley still doesn't. So I don't know. Maybe. I mean, there's room because of how long Raw is and everything. There's room to have more than one women's feud on there, isn't there? So you know, it should be happening.
It blows my mind that again this. In fact, that's the first two Rumbles in a row because there was two in one night that you had fan favorite ending.
Yeah,
that fans are pleased. Blows my mind that people still find a reason to complain, but that's a rare one with the Rumble to get that result that people aren't angry about a Nakamura winning and Asuka. I mean, with Nakamura and Asuka winning, you might say WWE is the new Japan. the new Japan. Pro wrestling. new.
Don't get it.
Sorry.
Is this the first wrestling pay per
view?
Get out. -5 stars. This final question. Is this the first pay per view where we've all come away from it with a Little Mix song stuck in our head?
Yeah, what a tune, right?
What? I don't understand.
It was the official theme tune for the Royal Rumble was a song by Little Mix featuring Stormzy.
Yeah.
The In the Heart of the Rumble, In the Heart of the Jungle thing. That song.
The one that they used.
The Heat of the Jungle?
The Power is called. Yeah, I know, mate. It's modern music, isn't it? You just listen to bleeps from Belgium.
I really like him.
Yeah.
All right, Rosenberg.
Right, plug some stuff. Briley, plug Tings.
Should we do one each of the two big UK shows?
Yeah, well, no, so you do all of them because then I think people have tuned out by the time I do my shit. So you do yours.
Well, I know that's how booking meetings work. Yeah. So,
come on, I'm not going. Come on.
So, Progress Wrestling is the company that me and Jim and our Fordham brother Glenn. Run loosely. We have shows every month in Camden at the Electric Ballroom, and we go all around the country: Manchester, Sheffield, Birmingham. Midweek shows at the Dome in Tufnell Park. But the actual shows that we want to tell you, I just hit the table. Don't know if that picked up on the mic, but you know now. We have three big UK shows this year, and one big one in America, or two technically.
Two.
So in the UK. We do a tournament weekend every May, which is a 3-day event called Super Strong Star 16. 16 of the world's best independent wrestlers fighting.
Yeah. Doing a fight.
It's at Alexandra Palace this year, which is big.
Yeah. Because to explain, last year the entire weekend sold out in about 7 minutes, and loads of people want to come to it, and people buy flights to come to it from overseas, so we want to get as many people in as possible.
Yeah, so we're at Alexandra Palace. Tickets for that are on sale. You can still get weekend tickets from like tier 3. Back there are 4 tiers, 4 ticket levels. Yep. So level 1 and level 2 are gone. You can get weekend tickets from level 3 back, and you can get single day tickets as well.
Cool.
Do you want to carry on? Or are you going to do the rest? I feel like I'm botching this slowly.
It's nice.
I'll take
it.
Over.
I'll
tell you what, this is just again, just talking live. Ali Pally, someone at Ali Pally for ages has been trying to get me to do live podcasts in one of their rooms. So if there's a small room there and you're doing the whole weekend, then we should have a look into that, right?
There is a small room.
Look into some post-show
shenanigans.
Should we do that once we've stopped
talking?
Yeah,
we'll do that when we stop talking. It's business.
I'll carry on. We're doing a big show in Manchester. First time we've done a room that isn't the Ritz in Manchester. We're doing Victoria Warehouse on the 20th of May. That is about three times the size of the Ritz.
Wow.
And tickets for that go on pre-sale this Friday, 2nd of February, and open for general sale next Monday, the 5th of February. And then Wembley Arena.
Oh, yeah, that one. Tiny.
30th of September. People keep asking us, A, how many tickets we've sold. We're not going to tell you. And B, how big the venue is. It goes up to 10,000. We haven't set it up for 10,000.
We're not fucking idiots.
Exactly.
I mean, if we did that, I mean, brilliant.
We have the option to expand it.
But we're not idiots. We're not. No. That'd be massive. That'd be more than WWE had there at their last show they did at Wembley Arena. So that's a lot.
Yeah. The thing that's great about a Wembley for anyone who's in fear there is any setup they do for it, it feels intimate and exciting. If you've got 10,000, then it'll be full. If there's not 10,000, they close it off. I've seen a lot of mixed martial arts there, and I'm going to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu thing there, and they shut it off beautifully so you don't lose the atmosphere
which
can happen at the places if it's half empty or whatever.
It will be intimate if it needs to be, or it'll be completely full. Either way, it'll be banging. And tickets are cheap.
Tickets are cheap for a show at Wembley Arena. We're not going to lie.
Because we're terrible capitalists.
Our accountants fucking hate us. Hey, proper. Why don't you charge £150 to sit in your front row like PWG do? Because we don't want to. Okay, good.
Yep, cheers.
Good discussion.
So that's happening. Tickets for all of those at progresswrestling.com. And we are going to New Orleans on WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
6th and 7th of April. The shows are at 12 noon. Yeah. There is nothing else on. Come and see those shows.
Lunchtime wrestling.
Exactly. And those tickets are at Ticketfly.
Yeah, and we've already announced various people will be on the shows.
Yes.
You can see on our Twitter feed, which is this_progress. There you go. Cheers. To you, John. Watch all our shows as well, demand-progress.com.
Yeah.
Good. Including this last weekend's show, probably by next weekend, with the best match I've ever seen.
End of tired plugging.
Yes. Pip, plug your stuff.
Hello, mate. I don't normally have tons I want to plug, but I've actually got a future podcast that I think will be really interesting to everyone. So this week I've got Vicky McClure, who's absolutely amazing, one of the best actresses.
I've just started watching Line of Duty.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't
it? Yeah, I've just really done one and two. Because on Apple have introduced what's it called? TV app.
Yeah.
And you can get box sets from various different places, and it's really just like a gateway into iPlayer or whatever.
Yeah,
but we started watching Line of Duty. It's the best.
It's brilliant. I ignored it for ages, thinking, oh, it's a BBC drama.
Right,
it's
just exactly.
Whatever, a cop thing.
Well, but it's not like you've never been in a BBC drama, mate.
Whatever. But the week after, I've got Florence Pugh on, who was in Lady Macbeth, which is amazing, and she's up for the BAFTA for Best Newcomer. But she also plays Paige in the upcoming Fighting With My Family. And we have an amazing discussion about that. And some of the stories she tells of how they shot certain scenes. And it blew my mind because loads of it's so wrestling that they have to ask favours. There's one particular huge scene they shot. The reason they could get it as good as they got it is because The Rock went out and said, please. But it's literally, it's amazing stories. You think these big Hollywood films, because again, it's a huge film. You think it's all going to be tons of money. The situation they had was there were some wrestling fans somewhere that would have been perfect for this moment. And The Rock went out and said, guys, would you all mind sticking around and doing this bit of filming for us as a favour? And there's just some cool little stories in that. So yeah, that's one worth checking out. And you get to hear me having to bite my tongue on being a massive wrestling nerd, because obviously I'm not there to force my knowledge on people, and my guest doesn't know that I'm a massive wrestling nerd. So at points where she said, and what people don't know about wrestling is that it's really, because that to go through full training camps, everything, it's really cool. But she's telling me stuff about how it really hurts and all this kind of thing, and I'm there like,
yep.
No, I'm not gonna turn this into a wrestling
episode, I'm going to let you tell your story because that's the important bit. But yeah, it's just some really good talk of the favours they had to pull and the fact that this young girl trained for 3 months to learn wrestling and then she's had one match and it was a sold out arena in front of 30,000 people.
It's pretty amazing.
Insane.
Yeah, it's fairly nuts.
But yeah, it's worth a look. So that's the week after next. So
sweet.
Check it out.
Nice one. Final plugs for me.
Oh, it's called the Distraction Pieces Podcast. Oh, yeah, that's I should mention that. Yeah. Sorry, just
fucking hope I know that.
I forgot to plug my own Twitter.
Did you?
Yeah. Brilo tweet. Don't tweet me.
Thanks. just make it private, mate, then. No one can. Me, at Jim Smallman on Twitter. Use hashtag Tuesday Night Joe if you want to talk to me about anything that you've heard on this podcast or just about wrestling in general. My website is jimsmallman.com. If you go to jimsmallman.com/TNJ, you can buy some t-shirts associated with this podcast and you can get all the links and stuff like that for how to download it.
I've just put my hand up all politely because I just remembered that I'm in a wrestling film that's coming out.
Oh shit, yeah, you
called, are. Called War Like a Panther, and that comes out on March 8th, and I'm dead excited about it because the trailer has gone out and gone down really well. So that's, yeah,
with
that's
you,
very exciting.
Flapping a towel at someone.
Me
gentle.
Flapping a towel at Neil Fitzmaurice's genitals.
Who's Dave another
Johns,
mate of mine?
Yeah, Dave well. Johns in the lead, who's a mate of yours.
Yeah.
It's mainly, the beautiful part is there's one, two, I think there's 5 or 6 people I've had on the podcast in this film. Mm. So it feels like it's Distraction Pieces, the movie, but it's about wrestling.
Because when Dave was first on your podcast,
yeah,
he messaged me and went, I met one of your mates today.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was
yeah,
like, my life's weird
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
isn't
it's nuts,
isn't it? Weird.
But yeah,
weird,
that's like, exciting, and it's out March 8th, so.
Sweet.
Keep an eye out for that.
Right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with something, I don't know what, but some craziness. And yeah, cheers. You guys rock. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.